Nick!
Gentleman!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
Good morning, everybody. Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 o'clock. It is Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. That's one artist, two songs. Get your requests in now. We'll play them starting after 2 o'clock. One artist, two songs. You pick them. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So get those in now. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And the great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. Coming up after the 1:30 news, Alex Chadwick is going to join us. He is the general manager over at the Chicago Music Exchange. And we're going to talk about how cool the Chicago Music Exchange is. And he did a video a little while ago where he played 100 of the greatest guitar riffs of all time. And it has so many hits on the internet and on YouTube and so on and so forth. And I've seen it a bunch of times and it's really great. And we're going to talk about that and the Chicago Music Exchange and music in general. So we're going to do some music stuff. And then after that, we're going to talk about movie musicals. What are some of the best movie musicals of all time? What are some of your favorites? And also, speaking of music related sketches, Saturday Night Live's legendary sketch, Cowbell. More Cowbell, the Blue Oyster Cult behind the music sketch about More Cowbell, is pushing 20 years. It's going to be 20 years old. And there's a great backstory on how More Cowbell got started and how where the origin was and what happened and how it turned into one of the most iconic and one of the funniest and most memorable sketches in the history of Saturday Night Live. So we're going to talk about that sketch, and then we're going to jump into what are the best sketches in SNL history, because that's certainly, More Cowbell is way up there on the list of some of the funniest sketches in SNL history. And there's a lot there to talk about. So love talking about SNL, and I figured since we've got this really great story about the origin of the More Cowbell sketch, that we could just jump into some of our favorite sketches of all time. So that's what's coming up on the show. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and also for your 2 for Tuesday request.
Yeah!
And that's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. And you can also follow us on Facebook, which is a really great way to stay connected on the show. So it's Facebook.com/Nick D Show. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's what's coming up on the show. Let me say hello. My regular producer, Tom Hush, is still under the weather. So he is off this morning. And once again, Sammy is filling in. I appreciate you filling in, man.
Oh, I appreciate being here. I can't believe they let me back in for a second round. Let's go for two.
All right, you got it. So Tom's a little under the weather. We hope he feels better, and we hope he comes back soon. But Sammy's filling in for him this morning, and he will be handling the 2 for Tuesday requests as well as doing all the producing duties throughout the morning. And our phone number again is 312-981-7200. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, Nick.
How are you?
I'm also shocked they keep letting me back in. I'm good.
Cool, man. Very, very, very cool. How about them Cubs?
I didn't see a single pitch, so thanks a lot.
Well, I listened to the they did win, and actually Darvish got a win.
Did they win, or did they win against a minor league baseball
team? Well, they won, but thank God the Marlins suck. I mean, the Marlins are terrible. They're like 4-13. And they made errors. They did. They did everything that they could to possibly lose that game. And I'll tell you what. You know how on the radio side, Vic, that Pat Hughes always takes the fifth inning off,
right?
Like he does not broadcast during the fifth inning. The fifth inning last night was like an hour. So it was like the longest break. I think it was the longest break that Pat Hughes has ever taken during the game, because there were like 60 pitches between the two.
Kidding.
No, it was ridiculous.
Wow.
There were errors all over the place. It was just it was a nutty fifth inning. Contreras is on fire. He hit his he's leading the team with homers. He hit his sixth home run last night. Chris Bryant got hit by a pitch twice, then got hit by two throws where he slid into second, he got hit with the ball. He slid into third, he got hit with the ball. He got hit four times with a ball.
Did he finish the game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he was fine.
No injuries.
No, and he also got his bat's been cold lately. Chris Bryant's bat's been a little cold lately. But last night he walked and he got hit by a pitch twice, and then he got a long single, like a really beautiful line drive single. It was a double. So his bat's getting a little bit warmer, which is nice.
Yeah,
because we
nice.
Could use that.
Did you see the one play where Darvish hit the batter and then it bounced off and hit the umpire as well? It was a double. He got doubled down on
no,
that.
No, I didn't see that. No, because I was listening to the game, so I didn't see it. But
one of those 98-mile-per-hour fastballs.
Oh, I see.
Right at the batter, and the batter hit off him, hit the ump. That's called double damage
right
there.
There you go. He still doesn't have – I mean, you know, Darvish won that game, but he still doesn't – he doesn't have the control that he once had. hey, they won, and they play again. They play again tonight, right? They're another 6-10 start, isn't it?
Yeah, again tonight. Yep.
And they're in Miami. So
yeah, but it is. That's good to hear that Darvish looked good.
He looked pretty good. He didn't look great, but he looked pretty good. And and it also helps that the Marlins are terrible. That's
a valid point. That Sammy raised.
But it was it's fun. And Sox won. And the Sox
Tim
won,
Anderson.
and former Cub was the hero of the game.
Wellington,
yeah, Wellington Castillo was the hero of the game. Hit the game winning home run,
bomb him the eighth inning too. Way to come up at a big at bat.
So anyway, he's an ex Cub. So there you go. All right, well, that's some baseball is happening right now, everybody. So our phone number is 312-981-7200. And Vic, did you ever play a musical instrument?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you play?
It's a pretty long list, but I stopped playing them other than the guitar. I kept
with
the guitar.
I remember you played the guitar.
Not very good at the guitar, but I can play around and have fun. But, when I was a kid, though, yeah, I played the cornet, the trumpet, the trombone, the tuba. I played...
You played the tuba?
The bass drum in the marching band. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How difficult is it to play the tuba?
Pretty easy. I found it pretty easy. In fact, I never learned how to read music. I faked it. So I would memorize. Yeah. I could play by ear and memorize the songs, and I got by just fine. I was never like first chair. I was more like third chair. But
yeah.
I could get by. And then the tuba, though, I found that to be the easiest for me.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Real easy to fake too if you got to a part of the song where you couldn't remember what you're supposed to do, so you just kind of blow a little, you know, not so hard.
Right.
Yeah, I found it to be one of the for me.
Wow.
One of the
easier
ones.
Well, because we're going to have the general manager of the Chicago Music Exchange in after 1:30, and they're like this huge music store that caters to all instruments, like tons of different instruments, and they're one of the biggest music stores in the city. And Alex Chadwick is the general manager. He's going to be here. And he also did that video that I was describing earlier, mm-hmm. Vic, where he did 100, he strung together 100 rock and roll riffs that are recognizable from songs. And he did it as a history lesson and played them in chronological order.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's been online now for a few years. And so we're going to get him. He's going to bring his guitar in tonight, and we're going to get him to play some riffs live. So,
very cool. Very cool.
Cool. But yeah. So how long did you play?
I think I quit band when I by fifth grade I got into maybe sixth grade I think was my last year, and then junior high started more into sports. I did both, but I decided to drop band and just go straight sports.
Yeah. Yeah, I was never in band in high school.
Yeah.
No, I played guitar when I was a kid, and then kind of switched it up to drums. And I haven't played any musical instruments in years and years and years.
I think it helped me in life in a lot of different ways, you know, being involved in band when I was that young. I think it did. Gave me a good ear for music and, you know. I'm like Patty Vasquez, though. I have an appallingly poor education in music.
Patty doesn't recognize like Stairway to Heaven
in that way. Well, I would recognize that one, but
I was walking through the hall.
It's pretty bad.
I was walking through the hall when I got here,
yeah.
And I was walking through the hall, and obviously the shows are piped in through the offices here on the 18th floor.
Yeah.
I was walking through, and I couldn't. I was like, "Patty, how do you not know these songs?"
It's hilarious.
It's unbelievable.
It's so funny, though. It's kind of endearing, actually. But I'm pretty bad as well. I'm pretty bad as well because I stopped listening to new music by the time I hit 30. I was done. I found what I liked, and I stuck with it, and that really hurt me. And then I'm finding now in my, you know, I don't want to say late, but I'll say it. Late 40s. I'm now listening to newer music again.
Are you?
Yeah.
I'm not.
Well, yeah. I don't blame you.
I don't know. I kind of stopped listening to new music about early 2000s.
Your knowledge would be vastly superior to mine.
Early 2000s, I would say. For sure. I just kind of went, when everything stopped being about albums and it was just about singles, you know what I mean?
Because
everything is like on shuffle mode, man. Nobody listens to albums anymore. I like to put an album, I like to listen to an album.
Right.
First album, from the first song to the last song. I don't know what, and half the stuff, I don't know what the hell's going on. And like whenever I watch the Grammys, I'm like, I don't know who the hell that is. I have no idea what's going on right now.
Yeah. You remember, like back in the day when you used to buy albums like that, you would be listening to the radio. You would hear one of your favorite songs from one of your favorite bands, and you would immediately know what's next. Although
right.
it's not going to be played on the radio, but
right.
you knew which song came next on that album.
You're absolutely right. And now that doesn't even exist anymore.
I'll tell you what's even worse.
The Grammys, at least the Grammys, I'll spend half of the time watching the Grammys going, I have no idea who that is or what the hell is happening right now.
Right.
But then the other half, because they'll bring out older musicians, because it's the Grammys, they'll bring out older musicians, so they'll bring out people from the past and, maybe some people from now that I know. But the most ridiculous is the VMAs on MTV. I don't know what the hell is going on there. No clue. I feel like I'm 150 years old whenever I make the mistake of tuning into the VMAs. I'm like, I don't know who that is. There's a dude with a tattoo on his face. I don't know what's going on.
I feel like my dad now.
No,
when I watch something like
it's
that.
It's absolutely true, man. It's absolutely true. I never thought, when I was younger, I never thought that I'd be like, what the hell is this noise? But that's how I feel now.
Well, I walked into the living room the other day and I said, why is that so loud? It was my kids playing music. moments like that.
Right.
Yeah. I've become my father.
Yeah. It happens to everybody, man. It does. It happens to everybody. Well, anyway. Well, we are going to talk about movie musicals. After Alex, we talk with Alex Chadwick. We're gonna keep the music theme going. We're gonna talk about movie musicals, and then one of the funniest sketches in SNL history involves music, and it's the More Cowbell. Vic, have you seen the More Cowbell?
Oh, sure.
Sketch. It's one of the
one
of the greatest sketches of all time. And so then we're going to jump into best sketches in SNL history, because there's a lot to choose from there. And I know everybody's got their own favorites, so we'll jump into that. So that's what's coming up on the show. Get your 2 for Tuesday requests in. We'll start playing those after 2. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Netflix is in talks to acquire Hollywood's historic Egyptian theater. So Netflix getting into the theater business now. They're going to take over the world. Pretty soon
it's going to be Amazon and Netflix.
That's Amazon and Netflix. That's going to be the name of our planet. Just Amazon, planet Amazon Netflix. So,
Amaflix.
There you go. So there you go. We'll talk about that after the break, and then after 1:30, Alex Chadwick from Chicago Music Exchange will join us live in studio. We'll be right back. Rush. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, I'm here, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk, text, and 2 for Tuesday requests. Coming up after 1:30, Alex Chadwick is going to join us, general manager of Chicago Music Exchange. You can check out chicagomusicexchange.com. For further information. He's going to bring his guitar along, so we're going to get to hear him play some riffs and have some fun. All right, so the story that I wanted to mention here is everybody has Netflix. We all do. We all watch Netflix, you know. And Netflix is expanding. And I just remember when I first heard of Netflix as like, they mail you DVDs, and then you mail them back. I remember thinking, wow, that's pretty unbelievable. You know, get your queue ready and order up a DVD. They'll mail it to you. You keep it as long as you want, and then you just mail it back. I thought that was revolutionary. And now what they've become is just, you know, obviously incredible. But Netflix is in preliminary talks with American Cinematheque to buy the Egyptian Theater on Hollywood Boulevard. This is a big deal. This will become the first brick-and-mortar movie theater acquisition for Netflix. But sources said that it would be wrong to eye this as the start of a move into operational theater business. This is a deal that sources place in the many tens of millions of dollars, and it'll put Netflix in good standing with the Hollywood cinephile community as the disruptive streaming company helps to preserve one of Hollywood's landmark movie theaters and its long tradition. It's also putting the nonprofit American Cinematheque on firmer financial footing in the process. The deal won't impact Netflix's ongoing relationship with independent theater chains that show its films like Landmark or IPIC Theaters. Both parties look at this as something of a partnership, the sources said. Netflix will program its screenings for weekday nights with the Cinematheque runs screenings, while the Cinematheque runs screenings, lectures, and occasional festivals will be on the weekend. The organization will be able to expand its programming with the financial resources from the deal. Netflix will hold occasional special screenings and events for some of its splashiest movie launches. Cinematheque will also continue to run its screenings at the historic Arrow Theater in Santa Monica, which it holds of a 10-year lease. Like most nonprofits, the Cinematheque has been cash-strapped in recent years. The organization presents screenings of historic, rarely seen movies from the U.S. and overseas. It is presently running a film noir week with important filmmakers addressing the overflow issues. The deal comes at a time when Netflix is eager to demonstrate that it wants to be one with the film community during negotiations with the Academy over theatrical windows for award contenders. It also comes on the heels of Netflix's most award-successful feature film with Alfonso Cuarón's Roma winning 3 Oscars, including Best Foreign Film and Best Director. Netflix Chief Content Officer Ted Sarandos is a board member of American Cinematheque, and sources said that he recused himself as this arrangement was voted on. The Netflix Cinematheque negotiations won't be finalized until issues involving real estate and city permits are hammered out. So that's pretty interesting, because a lot of people in the world of film, like cinephiles and things like that, are a little bit anti-Netflix. You know, a lot of people have been outspoken about it because it's stopping people from going to movies, and, you know, these big theatrical, you know, releases that are now coinciding with being available on Netflix at the same time. Like, for instance, Alfonso Cuarón's Roma, which was a movie that should have been seen on the big screen. I mean, it was available to see on the big screen, but very, very limited. And 90% of the people who saw Roma watched it on their TV or on their tablet, and that's just really not good, because it's a beautiful looking movie that deserves to be seen on the big screen with its incredible black and white cinematography, and it's a very cinematic movie, and to watch it, you know, on your TV, you know, the first time I saw it, I had a screener of it. So I watched it on my TV the first time I saw it. But then when the music box showed it, I went to the music box to see it on the big screen. And that's the way that you should have seen Roma. You know, now Scorsese has got The Irishman coming out with De Niro and Pacino and Pesci. And that's on Netflix. And one of the directors that I would rather not see his movies on a TV or a tablet is Martin Scorsese. Martin Scorsese's movies are meant to be seen on the big screen. I mean, he's one of the most brilliant and most cinematic of all filmmakers and directors, and his movies need to be seen on the biggest and most beautiful screen possible. So I'm mixed about Netflix. I have it. I watch a ton of Netflix. I watch a lot of the shows, and I watch a lot of the movies on Netflix. It's very, very, very convenient. And like a lot of people say, you don't have to get out of your house. You don't have to put up with people in the movie theaters, like talking on their phone. You don't have to put up with like kids running around in movie theaters because the movie going experience is not, you know, as sacred as it used to be. So staying home and watching Netflix first run movies with big movie stars and big movie directors, very convenient thing. But I think it's interesting that they're looking for the Egyptian theater. They're looking to buy the historic Egyptian theater on Hollywood Boulevard. And maybe that reputation will change. And it'll be interesting to see what they program and if that happens. But it's a kind of an interesting move for Netflix to try and get the Egyptian theater. All right. All right, cool. We got to take a break here. We got the news coming up. And then after the news, Alex Chadwick is going to join us. He's the general manager of Chicago Music Exchange. And we'll do that right after this. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday. That means two for Tuesday, so get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. We'll play those later. And, yeah, there we are. We're getting a little picture taken here. All right. So, I want to, you know, that's one of the most classic rock and roll riffs of all time. I think in most cases it's the first song you learn on guitar. Would you say that, Alex?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
Smoke on the Water, man.
Yeah, it's Alex Chadwick is with us. He's the general manager of the Chicago Music Exchange. You can check out chicagomusicexchange.com. How long ago was the 100 riff video done?
That was in 2012.
So it was that long ago.
Yeah, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it was a sensation with the 100 greatest guitar riffs of all time. One long, like 12-minute piece that you did, covering, you know, 100 famous, very famous rock riffs, and everybody loves a good rock riff.
Oh yeah.
So we're going to talk a little bit about that. You even brought your guitar, so you're going to play some of your favorite riffs with us.
Just absolutely.
Tear through some stuff. Well, first of all, let's get to know you. Alex, where are you originally from?
So I grew up out in St. Charles in the suburbs.
Okay.
My folks were Purdue grads, so I was born out in Lafayette, Indiana, so a bit of a transplant from the Hoosier State.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I grew up in the burbs, listening to WGN when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, rock radio around Chicago. My dad owned a music store when I was really young, so I've been around it, you know, pretty much my whole life.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's super fun when you grow up with guitars pretty much everywhere. It's hard for that not to be a part of your life.
When did you start playing? You had to have started playing at a very young age, right?
Oh, when I was about 12 years old, 12, I started picking up, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so your dad play instruments too?
Yeah, he still does. Yeah, yeah. He plays guitar, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where was his music store? Was it in St. Charles?
There was two of them. The main one was in Roselle. It was Roselle Music.
Yeah,
that one's been there forever. He bought it from the previous owner for a while. And then there was another little satellite location in St. Charles near our house that he opened up.
Yeah.
I started working. My first job was, you know, I was super young, at 14 years old, and, you know, working around the store with my dad on weekends and the summers. And
You know, for those of us who I played guitar for a while when I was a kid, and then I stopped and I moved over to drums, and I haven't been behind a kit in a long time.
I'm so sorry.
Well, but anyway, I have had times where I've gone into, you know, the world of the music store, and it is a different world. Let's talk a little bit. First of all, tell everybody about the Chicago Music Exchange.
Yeah, so the Chicago Music Exchange, it's been there. We've been in business since 91. We've been at our current location since 2006 at 3316 North Lincoln.
Yeah.
For anybody who hasn't been there, Chicagoland or otherwise, please stop on by. It's a beautiful showroom. We've got guitars, basses, drums, mandolins, banjos, ukuleles. We just had our grand opening of our synth room over the weekend.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which is way beyond my depth as a musician. But, I mean, a lot of that stuff is. I can't play drums to save my life. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's super cool to watch other people who know what they're doing
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have, you know, we cater to pretty much everybody from the absolute beginner to the, you know, professional level musicians and
right.
everything in between.
That's great. That's great. And then that location is the neighborhood where I grew up.
Oh, really?
I grew up at Addison Ravenswood.
Oh, wow.
And we used to go to the Lincoln Avenue area and shop over there all over the place. In fact, I bought my first album at a place called the Record Roost.
Oh, wow.
Which is now a Subway.
What was their album?
Paranoid.
Nice.
Yeah.
Black Sabbath?
Yeah, Black Sabbath. Paranoid. All right. First album I ever bought. And I remember when I walked up to the counter, it was in the 70s, I walked up to the counter and the guy behind the counter had crazy hair and a beard and all that stuff. And I walk up and I was a little kid and I put, you know, Paranoid in front of him and he looks at me, he looks at the record, and then he looks at my dad and he goes, "You sure you want your son to have this?" My dad goes, "He wants it. Just ring it up." So, but anyway, so I love that neighborhood. It's a great location you guys are in, man. That's very, very cool. How big is the place?
You know, I couldn't tell you in square footage. The ceilings are pretty high.
But, yeah.
We've got, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 guitars in the room.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Quite a few.
Okay. You know, there is a world of the music store,
mm-hmm.
and that's a very sort of a specific thing. What is that world like? What is it that you like about it so much?
That's a really hard thing to define because it's such a diaspora, right? There's so many different things that fall under that. I've worked for a handful of different shops during my life.
Yeah.
This is by far the best of them. I mean, by a mile.
Yeah.
But you know, every single one of them has had its charm, and though I think it's not quite the Wayne's World goofiness that you see
right.
in the movies.
Right.
You know, I think a lot of them get pigeonholed as like you know, the goofballs behind the counter,
yeah.
you know, shredding at customers and ignoring everybody. That's not at all what it is. I'll say this, you know, when I visit other cities and, you know, I see my friends in other towns or whatever, the very first thing I'll do, if I can sneak away, is visit a guitar store.
Mm.
Because, there's, you know, every single one in every single town has its charm.
Right.
And there's always something interesting. And, you know, if you're lucky, which is most of the time, especially if it's a mom and pop store, it's going to have its own character and its own charm, and I
yeah.
think, you know, the quality of the guitar store in a town says a lot about the town itself. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's really cool.
That's been my experience.
What is it about the Chicago Music Exchange that you love so much? That and from all the other places that you've ever worked or been to,
that's a long list. I mean, part of it's just the room. You know, I mean, huge windows, lots of sunlight. I mean, but that's, you know, certainly that the first thing you walk into is that. But all of that light shining on this room full of vintage instruments and new guitars that, you know, the first time I walked into that room, I saw guitars I'd never seen before in my life. I saw pedals that I'd been looking at in magazines for the past 10 years
mm-hmm.
and things I'd been dreaming of. I thought, wow, it would be amazing if I could find one of these. And I'd been looking for them and I'd never found them. And all of a sudden, I'm walking into a room where all of this stuff is there, literally behind a counter or on a wall, and I can touch it and pick it up and play it.
Yeah.
And now that's every day of my life. I get to come to work and there's all this amazing stuff.
That's really cool.
Yeah. And it wouldn't, you know, that would be one thing, but the fact that the people who are there are super friendly and super welcoming, and we really do our best to, you know, cultivate the kind of environment that works around that.
So, yeah. That's very, very, that sounds really cool. How many guitars do you own?
Personally, that changes a lot.
Yeah, I would imagine.
It just actually grew by one a couple of days ago. That's what this one is.
You got a new one?
I do.
Yeah.
It's a fun story behind that. But I think it's 8 right now.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite?
Well, again, right now it's this one. It was a week ago, it was one before this one. You know, so sentimentally, I think my favorite one is when I got married. The guys at the store in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
The guys at the store who were there at the time, it was actually most of the same people who are there now. Got together and there was a guitar. I was gonna have to sell a a couple of my guitars to buy this one I fell in love with. And they all I came into work one day and it was gone. And they said, "Oh, sorry, it, you know, it sold to this guy."
Oh,
yeah. And I came back from I said, "Oh, I was really bummed out." And I went and got married, and I came back from my honeymoon, and the guys were all sitting there at the middle of the store with the guitar case, and they said, "Hey, we pulled our money together and we bought the guitar for you. It didn't sell. They'd set it aside and bought it for me as a wedding present."
Oh, that's so great. What kind of guitar is it?
It's a 74 Mocha Strat. I bring it on stage as much as I can. It looks like it's been through a dryer with a bag of rocks, and it's perfect.
Yeah. Now, you just mentioned on stage, you play in bands?
I do. I play in a band called Western Automatic.
Uh-huh. Western, yeah. Oh, yeah. Western Automatic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've been on the show.
Yeah. What the heck is wrong with me? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you guys are great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, very, very cool. What is the guitar that you played in the 100 Riffs video?
So that was a 1957 Fender Stratocaster.
Yeah.
One that I do not personally own, because it's I could buy about five of my cars with that.
Yeah. you Fender guy?
I have been for a long time, yeah.
Yeah?
Recently converting to the Paul Reed Smith world, but that's a little bit of both.
You a Gibson guy?
A little bit. My first real guitar was a Les Paul.
Yeah.
So, and I still have it.
Yeah.
I love Gibson guitars.
Yeah.
I keep falling in and out of love with the ones that I buy, but I've never gotten rid of the first one that I got.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing. And they just, you know, just like anything, it's got to be the right tool for the job that you're
sure.
doing.
Sure. I mean, as far as Gibson goes, I'm a fan of the SG. I mean, I did buy Paranoid was my first.
Well, yeah.
That was my first record, so.
If you're a Tony Iommi guy, you got to have an SG. That's got to be your thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. But when I was a kid, when I played, I had a Strat. So so I did learn and play mostly on a Fender, and I love the sound of a Fender. Do Fenders sell the most at your store?
You know, I think it's probably about 50-50.
Yeah.
I don't know. You'd have to ask somebody who does more of the math on that
okay.
than me.
All right, Alex, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, Alex is going to get the guitar out, and we're going to hear some of his favorite riffs and talk a little bit more about the Chicago Music Exchange right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That, of course, is another one of the greatest rock riffs of all time. The aforementioned Tony Iommi, the riff master. Speaking of riff masters, Alex Chadwick is with us.
Hey, guys.
Hey, general manager of Chicago Music Exchange. And you can check out chicagomusicexchange.com. What are your hours over there so people can
come visit? Monday through Saturday, we're 11 to 7. Sunday, 11 to 5.
Okay. And at
3316 North Lincoln.
3316 North Lincoln, chicagomusicexchange.com. And as you said before the break, you take on newcomers to instruments, people who are interested in learning, and you know, pros.
Absolutely, yeah. Everything from people who've never picked up a guitar before in their lives to people who are, you know, professionals playing at, you know, stadiums all around the world.
That's fantastic. And how long have you been there?
I've been there a little over 9 years, since the beginning of 2010.
Okay. Very, very cool. All right. This, you made kind of a rumble on the internet a few years back with the 100 riffs that you did. Where did that come from?
You know, one of the owners of the store had asked pretty much any of the sales staff to come up with something interesting online, because we were just starting to have a YouTube presence at the time. And he had seen something where somebody had played some consecutive riffs and said, somebody just come up with put out 100 riffs or do something interesting. And I thought, oh, that sounds like a fun challenge.
Yeah.
So I strung it together and I came up with a medley, and I thought, well, you know what, if we're going to do it, let's make it consecutive and let's make it like a history lesson kind of thing.
So you did it chronologically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I did some searching on the Billboard charts and, you know, found the hits like year by year. And
yeah.
I thought it, I just thought it would be, hey, it would be a fun thing to do, and we just put it out there, and I thought, well, it would be fun if anybody watches it.
Yeah, and a lot of people watched it.
Yeah, I was in a hotel room in California at a doing a tour at the Taylor factory, and I got a call from somebody like, hey, people are starting to watch this. It's up to like 2,000 views, and I thought, wow, 2,000 views, yeah. That's really cool.
Ultimately, how many hits did it get?
It's like 30 million.
Well, that's cool, man. It's awesome, too. I've watched it several times. It's so much fun to watch. Now, do people give you feedback? Go, hey, man, you forgot this riff. You didn't do this one. Why did you include that one? You get these goofballs
Thankfully, not in person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's mostly just online.
Of course it is.
which means I can ignore it.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Well, you want to do a little bit of it? You can't do the whole thing. Just a few minutes?
Yeah, I'll do a little bit of it.
All
for
right.
You.
Okay.
Sure,
so these are the 100. This is from the 100 greatest riffs of all time, where Alex Chadwick did like a history lesson, chronologically some of the most memorable riffs ever. Are you ready to go?
Yeah, let's
all
do
right.
it.
That's great. That's so great. And people are still watching that thing, right? I mean, it's been up online now for what, 7 years?
Yeah, 7 years. Yes, it's been up for 7 years. Yeah, thankfully it's nice to be recognized a little bit on the internet for something that's not terrible. Yeah, people are still watching.
That's great, man. That's really, really great. When do you guys have your next gig? You can plug that too, man.
We're going into the studio at the end of May, so we're kind of taking a break from shows right now.
Okay.
So it's really just songwriting and recording at the moment, but we'll have some stuff here and there, but it's all studio work for us right now.
Yeah, and how's that? Do you like working in the studio?
I love working in the studio. I do a little bit engineering stuff on my own, just outside of the store, but I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. Who was your recording. Who are your musical influences? Who did you love listening to that influenced you?
Growing up in a guitar store, you hear a lot of stuff. So I would say the first time I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan blew my mind.
Man,
I had never heard anything like it before. One of the first records I ever bought was AC/DC Live, and like I was really into rock and Metallica and all that. I was the harder rock stuff, and then I heard Steve Ray Vaughan on the radio, and I was just a complete U-turn. I was like, what is this?
And
his voice and his playing and his command of the instrument, and I just dropped everything and said, I need to know how to do that. And that was just a massive influence.
Did you ever get to see him live?
No, I didn't even hear him until he had passed away.
I saw him. I got to see him twice. I saw him.
I'm
telling you, the show at the Aragon in the late 80s was one of the greatest shows I've ever seen in my life. And then I saw him in Merrillville at the old Holiday Star.
I feel like you could see him play a banjo in a 7-Eleven, and it would still be the greatest show you'd ever see.
He was unbelievable, man. Taken from us way too soon.
Yeah.
Man. Just such a tragedy. But so that was the big one. So Stevie Ray Vaughan. What's the first album you ever bought, you said? Was it AC/DC?
The first album I ever bought with my own money was AC/DC Live.
Right.
As soon as I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan, I went out and I got every single record of his that I could find. Just every bit of money I had went to buying his entire discography.
Yeah.
And I I still have it, you know.
Yeah.
I probably burned through four copies of Couldn't Stand the Weather.
I mean, legendary, man. Just a legendary guitarist, man. And it was incredible to see him live. It was just ridiculous. Especially that Aragon show. I was just like, what is going on? It was insane.
Yeah.
How much time do you spend at the music exchange?
Most of my time.
Really?
Yeah. Which, you know, it's not a bad place to be, you know.
Yeah.
Room full of guitars. There's definitely worse things to do with your time. Mm-hmm. No, I'm there most days. I mean, there's a lot to do. I mean, we have on top of, you know, what happens in the store, we have a pretty robust business online. And
yeah,
we do a lot with social media and videos and all sorts of other stuff.
How many people work in the store?
Oh, boy. I mean, there's...
Because you have to have people who have expertise in so many different instruments, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on how you define it, because we have the floor staff, and then we have guys who do, you know, the buying of the guitars and the repair staff.
Oh, sure.
There's, you know, all sorts of folks who are kind of behind the scenes. I mean, there's about 100 people who work in the store.
Wow.
And yeah, it's not something you would necessarily see just walking in the front door, but the CME is effectively a mom and pop organization. It's not tiny.
Yeah. And do you guys have regular customers that come in?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about some of these people.
Oh, the regulars are the best. I mean, those are the people that, you know, you see every day or every other day or whatever. And I don't even know if I would say most of them are like folks who are in the neighborhood. They're just people who come by, and I honestly think a lot of them drive in. But that's the best part about doing business, is, you know, you see the people who you know, and you know them by name. I'm terrible at knowing people by name, so if I know you by name, that means we know each other well enough that, you know, we've got built a relationship from being there. But you know, we have a good amount of regulars who come by and, you know, hang out and play guitar, and whether they are there to buy stuff or just hang out, you know,
that's really cool, yeah, man. That is really, really cool. So do you guys offer, have you ever thought about offering lessons?
So that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
You need the space and the teachers, and that's kind of a different kind of business.
Yeah.
We have teachers that we refer people to, that we know really well, and that we have, you know, relationships with over the years, but it's not something that we offer at this time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Some places do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you got enough stuff going on, it sounds like.
Yeah. And the places that do that do it really well.
Yeah.
So that's just not something that we want to kind of dive into yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the place is amazing. And Chicago Music Exchange, people can check out chicagomusicexchange.com. You guys have Facebook, you have all that, all that stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Facebook, Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure we have a Pinterest.
All right. Very, very cool. Well, thanks for coming down, man.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming back again. I will admit I completely forgot. I've had a lot of bands in studio, and sometimes they all kind of meld together, but you're great, man.
Thank you so much. Yeah. I actually had the card on my dress. I thought it was so cool to come in here before with my band. I kept the card in my little book. It says Nick DiGilio Show, Western Atlantic, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I think it was 2016 or something. I still got it somewhere.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming down, and thanks for playing live.
Yeah, thank you so much.
All right, that's Alex Chadwick, General Manager of Chicago Music Exchange, a really great place. Check out chicagomusicexchange.com. And again, that 100 Greatest Riffs is still out there in the ether. You can watch it out there online. Alex, thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back after this on 720 WG. And the cards say, welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. You know, we're having trouble with our texting again. It seems to be down, so we're not. If you should call in and make some requests if you want to do that. If you want to get some requests in, because we're having something's the issue again has popped up about not receiving texts. So for some reason, that's not working. So if you want to make a request for Two for Tuesday, you can call in and just let Sammy know what you want to hear. He'll jot it down and we'll play it a little bit later on. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. So call in for those requests. That was clearly Three Dog Night. Who requested that?
Tom, all the way from Indiana, filling the Three Dog Night.
All right. Tom from Indiana, a little Three Dog Night. Okay. All right. Again, our text situation is down. Maybe it'll come back up before we get out of here. And if it does, we will be the first to let you know that you can participate by texting as well. But right now, that seems to be an issue. But we're keeping an eye on it, and we'll see what happens. But call us up at 312-981-7200. So we figured we'd keep the music theme kind of going and talk about some of the best movie musicals of all time. What are your favorites? 312-981-7200. Newsweek recently did a survey of critics and writers to analyze some of the best musicals, movie musicals of all time. The little intro here that says it. His musicals go back a long way. Musical theater has its origins in ancient Greece, developing into stage shows before finally hitting the silver screen with the invention of sound technology. The 1927 movie The Jazz Singer was the first full-length motion picture with both a synchronized recorded music score and lip-synced singing and speech. It was a precursor to what would turn out to be the golden age of musical cinema, which started in the 30s and lasted all the way up until the late 50s. It seems fitting, then, that the film topping the critics' list of this Metacritic's list of the 50 best musicals ever made was made in 1939. The list was made by aggregating each musical's critic scores and weighing them according to a magical secret formula. Of the top five on the list, only one was made in the 21st century. And animated movies, particularly from Disney Studios, also make a good showing on this list. Many of the top films were made for children, as song sequences help draw in young audiences and communicate emotions in places where pure drama can feel heavier, inaccessible. It's not to say that there's no darkness in the musical's history. Tim Burton's 2007 movie Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, subverts the typical musical's sunny disposition to swirl black humor around the movie's murderous lead character. The fate of the musical has fluctuated through ages, though. The list only contains two movies from the 80s, at a time when the musical was deeply unfashionable. Yet the success of La La Land, as well as 2016's Sing Street, perhaps herald a new dawn for the genre. So, let's talk about the best musicals ever. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Let's see. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Yeah, of course. Of all the musicals I've seen, this is really the one that really got to me ever since I was a kid. Total classic. Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors is a great movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The plant, you know, sang by one of the Four Tops. Rick Moranis, Steve Martin. Steve Martin stole the show in that movie as a dentist. He stole the show in that movie.
Yeah. He's great, and it's a really fantastic musical. The songs are really good. It was great on stage, and Frank Oz did a great job bringing it to the movies. So
absolutely.
All right, Ike. Thanks.
No problem.
Yeah, Little Shop of Horrors. So many great songs in that soundtrack. Really, really cool. Here's what they've got going here. They mentioned Beauty and the Beast from 2017, directed by Bill Condon, starring Emma Watson, Dan Stevens, Luke Evans. A selfish prince is cursed to become a monster for the rest of his life unless he learns to fall in love with a beautiful young woman he keeps prisoner. So they picked the live action version at the bottom of the list, but I'm assuming that the animated version is going to pop up on this list. That was the first animated movie to ever be nominated for Best Picture. Beauty and the Beast, the animated version, not the 2017 version. All right, next here we got Tommy. From 1975, directed by the insane Ken Russell, Roger Daltrey and Margaret Oliver Reed, a psychosomatically deaf, dumb, and Blind Boy becomes a master pinball player and subsequently the object of a religious cult. This is one of the weirdest movies ever, and I love it. I love Tommy. I think it's great. Obviously, it's based on the double album, the rock opera by The Who, and but it's just such a strange movie. I mean, Ken Russell's a pretty crazy director, and it's got some really out there scenes and some really crazy cameos. I mean, Elton John on the giant boots playing the pinball wizard. Eric Clapton is in it. Jack Nicholson sings a number in it. If you've ever wanted to really hear Jack Nicholson sing, you got that. Tina Turner's in it. It's kind of an all-star cast. And I love the movie because it's completely over the top and completely insane. And you also get to hear the incredible vocal stylings of Oliver Reed, which is quite a treat if you've always thought to yourself, you know, I wish I could see British actor Oliver Reed sing. Well, you can, and he does in Tommy. But I think the scene that stands out, I think, for most people is because Anne Margaret's in it, and she gets several musical numbers in it, and she obviously can sing. But there's a scene in the movie where Anne Margaret is singing a song in her bedroom where there's white fur all over the place, and she's wearing a very interesting costume, which I enjoyed. And she's watching TV, and there's a whole bunch of different commercials and things that are on TV. And the next thing you know, there's baked beans flying out of the TV, and she's rolling around in baked beans and laundry soap. And it's kind of a classic scene, and it's just watching Anne Margaret, just at the height of her beauty. She was, I mean, she's unbelievably hot in Tommy. But to see her roll around in baked beans for about 5 minutes is pretty special. So, yeah. All right. So that's Tommy, which is I love that movie. Like I said, though, it is insane. They pick also Moulin Rouge, which is a movie I hate. Directed by Baz Luhrmann, Nicole Kidman, Ewan McGregor, John Leguizamo. A poet falls for a beautiful courtesan whom a jealous duke covets. I hated Moulin Rouge. I know a lot of people loved it. I know it was a smash hit, and it was nominated for a whole bunch of Academy Awards, and people really loved it. But it just made me nuts. I'm not a fan of the director. Not a fan at all of Baz Luhrmann. And when that movie was out and the Lady Marmalade was back on the charts again, I was just, come on now. So anyway, The Sapphires, which is a movie that not a lot of people have seen. Chris O'Dowd is in it. It's 1968 and four young, talented, Australian Aboriginal girls learn about love, friendship, and war in their all-girl group, the Sapphires, as they entertain U.S. troops in Vietnam. This is a movie that came out about, I think, 6 years ago or so, and it's a really lovely movie, and the music is really good, and the performances are pretty strong. But nobody knows about it. You should check it out. It's actually really, really good. It is. Next, they rank Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They got that one at number 44. I think a lot of people would have picked that higher. And, of course, it was directed by Mel Stewart, Gene Wilder, Jack Albertson. A poor but hopeful boy seeks one of the five coveted golden tickets that will send him on a tour of Willy Wonka's mysterious chocolate factory, and craziness ensues. Yeah, my issue with this movie, and again, I grew up on it. I loved it. And, again, this is, you know, not a popular opinion, but I think Tim Burton's version is better. And I know that people think I'm nuts for that, but I think Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is actually better because it's actually much more faithful to Roald Dahl's book. And there aren't horrible songs in it. And there are horrible songs in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Some truly terrible songs. But the thing is, it's the version that I grew up watching. So obviously it has a real soft spot in my heart. And Gene Wilder is great. That, you know, there's no arguing the performance by Gene Wilder in that movie. It is a great performance. It's funny. It's weird. It's scary. And he's easily the best thing in the movie, easily. But it's picked. I think people would think that this is a pretty low showing for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory because it's a really beloved movie. So, all right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're talking best movie musicals. What are your favorites? Our text situation is still down. So please call us with your thoughts on movie musicals. We'll put you on the air immediately. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And you can also call in and leave your request for Two for Tuesday because the text situation is down. So call us. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I squandered.
What happened to the second Three Dog Night song?
Just gonna put them in mixed order.
No, you gotta do them back to back. Back to back. All right, who's this? This is Simon and Garfunkel. Who requested this one?
This is John from Park Forest.
John from Park Forest. Okay. We'll hear another. Let's do Three Dog Night after that, then we'll do Simon and Garfunkel and play the two at the same time, the two songs at the same time, back to back. Two for Tuesday continues. Our text situation is still down. We are not receiving any texts because we don't know what's going on. It's down right now. So call us up at 312-981-7200. And you'll get through, and we'll put you on the air, and we can talk about movie musicals. And also, if you want to leave your requests for Two for Tuesday, get them in now. Again, the text situation is down, and we're working on it right now to find out what's going on and try to get that up so you guys can participate with the show via text and talk. And the phone number for talking is 312-981-7200. Just a little reminder, Tom Hush, my regular producer, is under the weather. He is out again this morning, so Sammy's sitting in. We thank Sammy for doing that. And again, call us right now to be a part of the conversation and a part of the requests for Two for Tuesday, 312-981-7200. We will let you know when the text situation is fixed. If it is fixed before the end of the show, we will give you an update on that. Okay, we are talking about movie musicals. We were talking about music a little bit earlier on and movie musicals. And what are some of your favorites? At 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Let's see. Newsweek put together a list where they, they did a poll with a bunch of writers and a bunch of critics about what they think are the best movie musicals ever. And they kind of put this scale together and put them all in a list. And we're up to number 43 here. Number 43 is Hair from 1979, directed by Milos Forman. It's John Savage, Treat Williams, Beverly D'Angelo. Claude Bukowski leaves the family ranch in Oklahoma for New York, where he is rapidly embraced into the hippie group of youngsters led by Berger. Yet he's already been drafted. He soon falls in love with Sheila Franklin, a rich girl, but still a rebel inside. This is another movie that I really love. Twyla Tharp did the choreography. And again, the musical itself, I think Hair is a great musical. Some people think it's dated. I guess it is, in some regard. But I thought Milos Forman did a really, really terrific job. And everybody is really good in it, particularly Treat Williams. Treat Williams is absolutely fantastic in it. And I thought it was great. And again, this is a classic musical that started out on stage, and everybody knows a lot of the songs because there was a ton of songs that became genuine hits when the play became popular in the late 60s. And I thought Milos Forman did a great job with it, really beautifully directed. And it's, Hair is actually one of my favorite movie musicals. So, and we also have the version of Into the Woods, which came out in 2014, directed by Rob Marshall. Anna Kendrick, Meryl Streep, Chris Pine, James Corden, Emily Blunt. Classic, really, really terrific musical. A witch takes a childless baker and his wife, tasks a childless baker and his wife with procuring magical items from classic fairy tales to reverse the curse on their family tree. And that comes in at number 42. 2014, that came out. Wow. It's been 5 years since that movie came out. It seems much more recent than that. This is another one of those musicals that I really like, Stephen Sondheim, and I've seen it on stage several times, and I thought they did a nice job with the movie. And I thought the cast was really good and everybody sang really well. Yeah, I was a fan of Into the Woods. I thought it was good. Didn't do great at the box office, but yeah. Now here's one that I think everybody most people really really love, and that of course is Grease from 1978, directed by Randall Kleiser, John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John, Stocker Channing. Good girl Sandy and greaser Danny fall in love over the summer when they unexpectedly discover that they're now in the same high school. Will they be able to rekindle their romance? So here's the thing about Grease. The movie version is a lot different than the stage version. And the stage version created right here in this city. Grease's origins go right to Chicago. But Grease is I have issues with the movie. I don't think it's a very well directed movie as a musical. I don't think Randall Kleiser really has a grasp on the editing and the shooting of a musical. Some of the songs I think are terrible, and everybody is at least 15 years too old for the parts that they're playing. This is supposed to be a high school movie, and I know it's an escapist musical and everything, and it was a monster hit. If this was at the time when Travolta could do no wrong, he did like 3-4 movies in a row that were just massive, massive hits, and this was the follow up to Saturday Night Fever, which was one of the biggest movies ever made. And so the summer of 1978, Grease was everywhere. It was a huge hit. It still is. And they play it a lot at midnight shows, the sing-along version of Grease. And people really love it. I just have some issues with it. But it's not one of my favorites, but it's entertaining, and I've seen it I've seen it a few times. Now the next one on this list I love, and that's Bugsy Malone. I don't know if I don't know how many people have seen this movie, but Alan Parker directed it. It's Jodie Foster, Scott Baio. It is a classic gangster story of Bugsy Malone, but it's told with an all child cast. And instead of bullets, they shoot ice cream out of the guns. It's a remarkably original movie, and the music is terrific, and I love the cast. I mean, I think with Jodie Foster especially, I love Jodie Foster. And I remember when Bugsy Malone came out, Siskel and Ebert really took to it. They were still doing their show. They're at the movies, and they really, really, really got behind Bugsy Malone. They kind of went out on their own campaign and mentioned it several times on their show. I think they each wrote a couple of pieces in the Sun-Times and Tribune, respectively. And, they got behind it, and they should have. I mean, it wasn't a big hit. It's kind of a cult movie now. In fact, it does have a pretty strong cult following. And like some of these other smaller or weirder musicals that we're going to be talking about here, they do discover, they finally are discovered by a group of fans. And this is certainly one of them. If you've never seen Bugsy Malone, you should. It is beautifully shot. The art direction is great. The costumes are really good. And Alan Parker has a great sense for music. He's directed a lot of movies that have that feature music and movie musicals he's done, which I know that at least a couple of more movies that Alan Parker has his stamp on will be mentioned in this article. There's no question about it. And so, Bugsy Malone, again, if you've never seen it, came out in 1976. And there aren't a whole lot of movies as original as that one that you'll see. And it's a really, really, really terrific movie and a great musical. So you should check it out. All right, let's take a quick break. By the way, if you want to jump in, again, the text lines are down, but our phone lines are open. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Join us for your thoughts on movie musicals. And if you just want to jump in and make a request for Two for Tuesday, those lines are open. Text lines are down. So call us instead. 312-981-7200. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. We got the news and then more movie musicals. What are your favorites? And which ones else? What other ones made this list of critics and writers' favorites? And 312-981-7200. Give us a call. And the news is up next.
NASA Twins.
Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain and shower.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. You hear me? Two for Tuesday. And that was a two for, that completes the twofer for Three Dog Night. And if you want to get in here, our text service is not working. So you got to call in and leave your requests at 312-981-7200. And also 312-981-7200. You want to get on the air and add to the conversation that we're having about movie musicals. And coming up a little bit later on, we are going to, speaking of music related to a sketch from Saturday Night Live, one of the most legendary sketches ever on Saturday Night Live. And it's approaching its 20th anniversary of this sketch, if you can believe that. But more cowbell. One of the funniest and most legendary sketches in SNL history, which is, you know, music related about Blue Oyster Cult and behind the music satire. I have the whole story about the origin of that sketch, how it came to be, some of the behind the scenes stuff behind it. So we're going to find out all about how More Cowbell became what it is right now. And then we are going to jump into what are your favorite sketches in the history of SNL. And there are so many to talk about. The funniest sketches of all time from SNL. That's coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Phil contributed and said that as far as movie musicals go, Wild in the Streets, which I have not seen in years, but I remember liking. So Newsweek magazine did a poll of a bunch of writers and critics and threw together this really cool list of movie musicals and, you know, what are the favorites. And we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Next here listed is Mulan, which came out in 1998. Lots of celebrity voices again. This is a Disney, animated Disney movie, which, as we mentioned in the introduction, there are well represented on this list of movie musicals is the Disney animated movie musicals. And this is Mulan. To save her father from death in the army, a young maiden secretly goes in his place and becomes one of China's greatest heroines in the process. A really good movie, Mulan. I've always been a really, really big fan of it. Now here's another Walt Disney animated musical, Tangled. Which I know a lot of kids love this movie. Mandy Moore, Zachary Levi, the magically long-haired Rapunzel has spent her entire life in a tower, but now that a runaway thief has stumbled upon her, she is about to discover the world for the first time and who she really is. This came out in 2010. God, I can't believe it was 9 years ago. But yeah, Tangled makes the list here too. And let's see. Next one, The Princess and the Frog, which is also a Disney movie. I've never seen this one. Let's see. Oprah Winfrey has a voice in it. Keith David has a voice. I've never seen this one, The Princess and the Frog. I know the story. A waitress desperate to fulfill her dreams as a restaurant owner is set on a journey to turn a frog prince back into a human being, but she has to face the same problem after she kisses him. Well, I've not seen that one. So, but it got a pretty good score here. Now, this is too low. Coming in at number 33, and this is, I think this is, actually, seriously, way, way too low. For me, if I were making a list of the best movie musicals of all time, this would be in the top 10 easy. And that's South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. Which is, I just think, one of the greatest movie musicals ever. First of all, the movie's hilarious. Second of all, the songs are great. And, you know, Trey Parker is a genius. When Cartman and his friends go see an R-rated movie, they start cursing and their parents think that Canada is to blame. There's a lot more to the plot than that. But this is truly South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut was one of my favorite movie musicals of all time. I think it's great. And again, these guys, I mean, obviously Trey Parker and Matt Stone, you know, have gone on to win every kind of Tony for the Book of Mormon. And have always had you know, have always had music in their in the show. They've done musical numbers on South Park, and the big musical theater has been a big part of their lives, and it shows in the TV show and especially in this movie. I think South Park Bigger Longer Uncut is that's way too low. 33 is way too low. It needs to be a lot higher. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Number 32 is Frozen. The movie that if anybody has daughters now have seen 674 times. And Frozen 2 is coming out at the end of the year. Kristen Bell, Idina Menzel, when the newly crowned Queen Elsa accidentally uses her power to turn things into ice to curse her home in Infinite Winter, her sister Anna teams up with a mountain man, his playful reindeer, and a snowman to change the weather condition. Yeah, this is a movie that that I know that like if parents are listening right now, they're like, yeah, I know, I've seen it 5,000 times. So, let's see. Teacher's Pet, which is another Walt Disney movie that came out in 2004. Nathan Lane is one of the voices. Spot is a dog who can talk and read. Posing as a human, he sneaks into school with his master, Leonard, and educational adventures ensue. That sounds fascinating. I've not seen Teacher's Pet. And I'm looking at there's a still here, and the animation looks a little weird. It looks like it has a very distinctively weird look to it. So I'm not familiar with that one. Maybe you guys are familiar with it. 312-981-7200. We have Hercules, Walt Disney. The Walt Disney animated version of Hercules. Ron Clements and John Musker directed it. Tate Donovan, James Woods, and Susan Egan were the voices. The son of Greek gods Zeus and Hera is stripped of his immortality as an infant and must become a true hero in order to reclaim it. This was a fun telling of the story. The animation wasn't all that great. It didn't blow off any doors or anything like that. But the music was entertaining, and it was actually kind of a fun telling of that classic story. All right, moving up on the list here. Number 28 is the Muppet Movie, which James Frawley directed. Jim Henson, Frank Oz, everybody else from the world of the Muppets is involved in this. Kermit and his newfound friends trek across America to find success in Hollywood, but a frog legs merchant is after Kermit. I think a lot of people can consider this movie an absolute classic, the first Muppet movie. I remember when it came out. I was like 14 when it came out, 14 or 15 when it came out, and it was massively popular. And another one of those movies that like the critics really jumped on. I was talking a little bit earlier about Siskel and Ebert really championing Bugsy Malone. They did the same thing for the Muppet movie. And justifiably so, because it's a great movie. I think it's the best of all the movies that the Muppets made. It's the best one. And the music is terrific. Paul Williams wrote, a few of the songs. That's a terrific movie. How about this one, Enchanted, with Amy Adams, Susan Sarandon, James Marsden, and a young maiden in a land called Andalasia, who is prepared to be wed, is sent away to New York City by an evil queen where she falls in love with a lawyer, played by Patrick Dempsey. I remember thinking this movie was I've only seen it just the one time. I mean, it's like, and it came out like 12, 13 years ago. But I remember thinking this movie was pretty charming, and 90% of the reason why I liked it is because of Amy Adams. Amy Adams is, she's really delightful in this movie. She's great. And as we all know, you know, she's just terrific. Let's see. Dreamgirls directed by Bill Condon, Beyonce, Jamie Foxx, Eddie Murphy, Jennifer Hudson. A trio of black female soul singers cross over to the pop charts in the early 60s, facing their own personal struggles along the way. So, Dreamgirls, big hit. Obviously, you know, Jennifer Hudson made such a giant splash in that movie, won herself an Academy Award right out of the gate after being on American Idol. A really terrific performance by Eddie Murphy, too. Like, a big comeback performance by Eddie Murphy in that movie because, like, he was doing stuff like Norbit and those Dr. Dolittle movies. He had done, like, four or five horrendous movies in a row. And, like, a lot of people were considering that his career was pretty much over. Like, the stuff that he was doing was just terrible. But he came back really, really strong in Dreamgirls, and it's a terrific performance. It's a good movie, too, and it's a good musical. Linda called in and said she loves Cat Ballou. Cat Ballou. Of course, with Lee Marvin. He won the Academy Award for that movie. Lee Marvin, Jane Fonda. Sing Street, a lovely, lovely movie. A boy growing up in Dublin during the 1980s escapes his strained family life by starting a band to impress the mysterious girl that he likes. A tremendous movie, all the way around. Directed by John Carney, who did Once. And it's a really kind of a joyous movie, you know, with wonderful music and a great connection to the 80s. And also it takes place in Ireland, so therefore it makes me happy. Next on the list, number 24, this is too low. This is too low. This should be in the top 10. Cabaret, directed by Bob Fosse, which, by the way, Fosse-Verdon on tonight again at 9 o'clock on FX. If you're not watching it, you should because it's great. Sam Rockwell, Michelle Williams. It is really, really terrific. They're doing a great job with it. I'm very excited about it. The pilot, the first episode from last week was just great. And so it's back on again tonight on FX at 9 o'clock. And that's Fosse-Verdon, which covers the making of Cabaret. Liza Minnelli, Michael York, and Joel Grey. A female girly club entertainer in era Berlin romances two men while the Nazi party rises to power around them. Too low. Number 24, too low. Cabaret needs to be higher. So, all right, let's take a break here. We want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200. Again, the texts are not working right now. The text the communication is, of course, down, so we're asking that you call in 312-981-7200, and we'll get you on the air, and you can leave your request for Two for Tuesday as well. And there you go. All right, we're going to come back after the break here. We'll wrap up the talk about movie musicals, and then we're going to jump into the behind-the-scenes story and the origin of how More Cowbell on SNL became one of the greatest sketches of all time, and then we're going to jump into that topic. The funniest and best sketches in SNL history. What are your favorites? So, all right, we'll take a quick break. More after this. Completes the two for four Simon and Garfunkel. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, two for Tuesday. The text system has crashed and is down, but our phone lines are open. And if you want to call in and leave your requests for Two for Tuesday, one artist, two songs, call them in, leave them, and we'll play them in a little bit. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And that is also the number to call in to talk about your favorite movie musicals of all time. 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up, The Stories That Matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. All right, let's get back to talking about this Newsweek poll that they did with movie musicals. We were talking about music a little bit earlier. We're going to continue talking about it. Here as the movie musicals. Next here in number 23 is Hairspray, which is the version of the musical that was based on the John Waters movie. I thought it was okay. I wasn't crazy about it. I love the original John Waters movie, which is technically not a musical, but the original John Waters movie is just fantastic. So, mentioned earlier by our friend Ike, A Little Shop of Horrors comes in at number 22. A nerdy florist finds his chance for success and romance with the help of a giant man-eating plant who demands to be fed. Rick Moranis, Ellen Green, Vincent Gardenia. This is a really terrific movie, a great movie. I showed it last year at my film club, and we had a great time with it. And I showed the alternate ending where, like, basically the plants multiply, they're giant, and they just basically destroy Earth. And that was the alternate ending. And it goes on forever. Like, we showed the alternate ending, and it does. It goes on forever. It's much darker too. So that was a lot of fun, though, seeing that on the big screen. We had a nice crowd for that one, too. People really like that movie, and they should. Okay, from a couple of years ago, Moana, another Disney animated movie. And in ancient Polynesia, when a terrible curse incurs, the demigod Maui reaches Moana's island. She answers the ocean's call to seek out the demigod to set things right. This is another one of those movies that over the last couple of years, if you've had kids, you've probably seen this one again 15,000 times. I know my former producer, Dan Shagru, his two little girls love this movie. And it's one of those things where, you know, if you have kids, they can watch something over and over and over and over and over again 15,000 times and never get sick of it. But that isn't the case with a lot of a lot of people who are adults who don't want to sit through the same thing over and over again, but they have to. Number 20 is Coco, a lovely movie from about a year and a half ago. And it is a beautiful movie. Aspiring musician Miguel, confronted with his family's ancestral ban on music, enters the land of the dead to find his great-great-grandfather, who was a legendary singer. This is from Pixar. It's Disney Pixar, and this is a really wonderful movie. And yet another one of those movies that Pixar makes. And Pixar is guilty of this all the time. They just keep making movies that make you cry. I mean, I can't even tell you the number of movies that Pixar has made that had me weeping. And Coco was another one from a couple of years ago. Really, really terrific movie. Number 19 is Chicago, directed by Rob Marshall, Renee Zellweger, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Richard Gere, John C. Reilly, based on the classic, musical, Broadway musical, Chicago. Won all kinds of Academy Awards, including Best Picture. Catherine Zeta-Jones won Best Supporting Actress. And it's a really solid movie, really well done. And Chicago was actually a really good musical in general. Number 18 is The Nightmare Before Christmas. So Jack Skellington, King of Halloween Town, discovers Christmas Town, but his attempts to bring Christmas to his home causes confusion. This movie has, like, some serious hardcore fans. The girl I was dating when this movie came out, like 25 years ago when it came out, because it came out in like October of 93, so it's been a little over 25 years ago. She became obsessed with this thing. Like, we saw it together, and when it first came out in the theater, she became obsessed with this thing, was listening to the soundtrack all the time, bought a whole bunch of the goodies and the tie-ins and stuff like that. And there's a real, real hardcore fan base for Nightmare Before Christmas. I like it, but I don't love it. Number 17, Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. Nice to see this one getting some respect. This is Tim Burton directed at Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter, Alan Rickman. I love this movie. First of all, it's a terrific musical, and I think Burton did an unbelievable job with this thing. Like, a really unbelievable job. And it's nice to see it ranking pretty high, like the critics really like it. 16 is The Lion King, which we're going to get the live-action version of. Classic Walt Disney. And let's see. The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. It comes in at number 14. And let's see. Here is David on WGN. Hi, David.
Hi.
Hi.
My choice would be Want by Glenn Hansard and Martina Yerglova.
Yeah, we mentioned we mentioned Sing Street earlier, which is from the same director, but Once is a great movie. A great movie.
Yeah, we saw them in person shortly after the movie came out.
Yeah.
And found out that Obama was in the audience when we saw him.
Yeah, that's not a surprise. That's they're you know, Glenn Hansard was just in town like last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was just in town at Talia Hall. He played Talia Hall, I think it was about 10 days ago. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, all right,
yeah,
thanks.
He puts on a great show.
He's great. He's absolutely great. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
He was also in The Commitments, too. You want to talk? He was in that. All right, let's wrap this up real quick. Number 13 on this list is West Side Story. That's about right. Number 12 is Aladdin. I don't think that should be above West Side Story, quite frankly. Now we have a live version of that coming out. Little Mermaid, number 11. Number 10 is The Blue Angel. Marlena Dietrich, of course, was in that. And number 9, Mary Poppins. And what else do they got here? Number 8, A Star is Born. The 1954 version of The Star is Born. That would be the James Mason, Judy Garland version. That's what they put here on the list. Number 7 is Funny Girl. With Omar Sharif, of course, and Barbara Streisand. Number 6 is Sita Sings the Blues. And number 5 is La La Land, which is one of my favorite movies like the past 5 years, easily. I love that movie. And let's see, number 4, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Absolute classic. Number 3, Beauty and the Beast from 1991. The animated version. I knew we would see that one pretty high on the list. People loved it. And number 2, Singing in the Rain with Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor. And so what would be number 1 then? That would be The Wizard of Oz, according to this list. I'm sorry, but the Singing in the Rain is a lot better than The Wizard of Oz. Like, a lot better. So, all right. Well, that was fun going through the movie musical. And we're going to break here. We got the news coming up, and then I'm going to tell you all about how the classic SNL sketch, More Cowbell, came into being. And then we're going to open up the phone lines to find out what you think are the funniest SNL sketches of all time. And we'll get to that coming up. And again, text lines are down, so just call in at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. You hear me? 2 for Tuesday. Our text situation is down. It's not working. So in order to communicate with the show or be a part of it, we want you to call in. And if you got a request for 2 for Tuesday, 312-981-7200. For talk only, our text situation is still down. So 312-981-7200 for calling in. And yeah, so who requested the U2 The Streets Have No Name?
Our contributor, Ike from Country Club Hills.
All right, Ike, thank you. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. So we are going to get into, in a little bit, we're going to get into the funniest sketches in SNL history. What are your favorites? And we're going back to all the way back to 1975 for, thousands of sketches. And some of them are absolutely classic, and we're going to get into that. We want to know, we want to hear from you what your favorite and funniest sketches for SNL were. Now, the reason I bring this up is because there's sort of a behind-the-scenes, story about one of the most legendary one of the most legendary sketches of all time. And that would be the More Cowbell sketch. For those people who don't remember this, it was a spoof on VH1's Behind the Music. And it was Behind the Music about Blue Oyster Cult and their recording of Don't Fear the Reaper. And so it was Jimmy Fallon, Horatio Sanz, Chris Parnell, and Will Ferrell. They were the members of Blue Oyster Cult. And the host that evening was Christopher Walken. And he played the producer, Bruce Dickinson, who produced the song. And they're in the studio recording Don't Fear the Reaper. And Will Ferrell plays the cowbell in it, which is prominently featured in Don't Fear the Reaper. And it's just how he really overdoes it with the cowbell. And it's, you know, the general reaction of the band members. And, of course, Christopher Walken, like, completely out of his mind, begging for more cowbell. You know, it features the famous line, "I got a fever, and the only prescription is more cowbell." So, and everybody breaks during it, with the exception of, because Christopher Walken is just so deep into the character and deep into the, more importantly, the cue cards, that he seems to be on a whole nother planet. So when everybody else on stage, like, completely breaks and loses, except for Chris Parnell, I got to say, Parnell's the only one who doesn't break. By that point, the sketch has gone down in history as one of the weirdest and one of the funniest. And it also, when a sketch features people breaking, actors breaking, like, charmingly and laughing, you know, people love to watch that. The audiences love that. So, I remember vividly watching it live and just, like, falling off my couch laughing because it was just so ridiculous. And so the story behind it is what I'm going to read to you now, and then we're going to jump into your favorite and funniest SNL sketches of all time. There's never really any way to know whether a Saturday Night Live sketch will become an instant classic or quickly fade from memory, but as Will Ferrell taught audiences on April 8th, 2000, it's amazing, April 8th, 2000, that's how long ago it was. You can tilt the odds pretty drastically in your favor if you fall back on a Blue Oyster Cult hit, bang some cowbell, and fittingly have a bizarre Christopher Walken performance. We're talking, of course, about the More Cowbell sketch, which imagines the recording session that produced the Blue Oyster Cult classic Don't Fear the Reaper, specifically the contributions made by cowbell player Gene Frankel, who is played by Ferrell, aggressively encouraged by cowbell-craving producer Bruce Dickinson, played by Walken. None of it ever really happened, and the whole thing was so surreal that it ended up being tucked away toward the end of the episode. But More Cowbell quickly took on a life of its own, a victory for Ferrell, who had to fight just to get it on the air. Now, for those of you who are regular, you know, listeners to the show or regular viewers of SNL, they call that the 1250 sketch. And the 1250 sketch is notorious for where they put the weird stuff, where they put the kind of the crazy weird stuff, because it's right at the end of the show. 1250 being obviously the Eastern time here in Chicago. Obviously, it's the 1150 sketch because we're off at midnight. But they've notoriously called it the 1250 sketch, and a lot of really insane sketches began there, and that's where Cowbell started. Every time I heard Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult, I would hear the faint cowbell in the background and wonder, what is that guy's life like, explained Ferrell. And although the sketch was cut the first several times it was pitched for inclusion in an episode, the idea lingered. I held on to it for, I think, 3 months until Christopher Walken was host and rewrote it for him. His odd rhythms fit so perfectly, and he gave it that special sauce, said Ferrell. Naturally, word quickly filtered back to the members of Blue Oyster Cult, who were in the midst of a resurgence of sorts. 2 years before the More Cowbell sketch aired, they released their first album of new material in a decade, 1998's Heaven Forbid, and were prepping for their next effort, 2001's Curse of the Hidden Mirror. While neither of those releases enjoyed the sales Blue Oyster Cult Drew in their heyday. They continued to tour steadily, and while Farrell's version of Reaper Session was wholly imagined, it wasn't too terribly far from the truth. Ironically, it was similar to what happened in the skit, admitted Blue Oyster Cult drummer Albert Bouchard. We had put a whole bunch of overdubs on the song. One of them was Randy Brecker, who put a flugelhorn part on it, or a trumpet or something in the middle part, and we didn't like it. And I said, hey, I want to do a triangle in that part. That's what I want. I really want I hear a triangle in my head. According to Bouchard, it was composer and jingle creator David Lucas who made the fateful call to add a cowbell instead of a triangle. I just want to hear that sound, Bouchard recalled Lucas insisting. I said, okay. So I played it, and I'm like, it's not working. And he's like, oh, well, we'll put some tape around it. So we put some tape around it. I used it with a timpani mallet, and everybody was like, yes, that's it. It's so funny that Farrell even noticed it, because it's very low in the mix, and you don't even really notice it on the track. Little of this mattered to SNL viewers, who were keyed into Farrell's performance, which combined a typical aggressive cleaning of the sort of desperate yearning for acceptance one might expect to see in a guy relegated to just playing the cowbell in a rock band. That coupled with the eminently quotable walk-in lines like, guess what, I got a fever and the only prescription is more cowbell, helped the sketch snowball from late-night curiosity to viral phenomenon and part of Blue Oyster Cult lore. Longtime frontman Eric Bloom admitted it took some repeated viewings to fully get how hysterical it was, quote-unquote, but he said he immediately appreciated the skit and said he actually happened to see it in on air in real time. It was a rare Saturday when we weren't on tour, so I saw it live, and we had no idea. He later recalled it was a jaw-dropping experience. As for Farrell, Gene Frenkel is just a one among the lovable man-children in his repertoire, but he's proven thoroughly memorable over the years in spite of the limited screen time. As far as the comedian is concerned, the sketch's appeal has a lot to do with stuff that people don't necessarily notice while they're laughing, and it could also help to explain why Farrell was singing, was willing to reprise his character in a 2005 SNL appearance alongside Queens of the Stone Age. To the less observant eye, the sketch was an excuse to let my belly hang out and wear tight 70s clothing, said Farrell. But it really was about the exuberance of a guy who was given the green light to really express his art. Even though it's funny, it was rooted in something real. So that's the behind-the-scenes story of how this thing was created. So Will Farrell, who's just got a very, very strange mind, came up with this thing. And it's just so funny to watch the sketch, which I've seen, I don't even know how many times I've seen the cowbell sketch. I mean, I've seen, hundreds of times. But to watch these guys break and lose it, it was really funny. And one of the major things about it was so funny was that while they're breaking, Walken doesn't even notice. Like, Walken's looking directly into the cue cards and staying just so focused on the cue cards and on the character, and so, like, bizarrely Christopher Walken-like and just a couple of beats off from everybody else, that adds to the insanity. Meanwhile, like, there's four guys on stage who are laughing, three guys on stage who are laughing because Parnell doesn't break, but the other guys do. They all break. But just to see what level of commitment and, what level of weirdness that Christopher Walken had in that sketch adds immeasurably to how funny it is. So, an absolutely classic sketch. And it's funny, when they did it in dress rehearsal, Will Ferrell didn't have that shirt on. Jimmy Fallon talks about this many times because they asked Jimmy Fallon what his favorite sketch was that he's ever been involved with. And he said, it's gotta be cowbell. It's gotta be more cowbell. And one of the reasons why it killed these guys where they broke so much was because, well, first of all, Will Ferrell's ridiculous in it, and he's dancing around doing the cowbell thing, and the shirt rises up, and when Will Ferrell was never shy about, showing his body and his belly, he would do it at the drop of a hat in any sketch. But what happened was he had changed shirts. So in between dress rehearsal, he had a shirt that fit. Like, when he was doing his movements, his belly didn't pop out, and the shirt didn't rise up. So what he did was, he put on a smaller shirt and didn't tell anybody he was going to do that. And so when he's gyrating around the stage with the cowbell, this new shirt that he got out of wardrobe is much smaller, and it rose up, and then his belly was hanging out, and it made him look even more ridiculous than he'd looked already with the stupid wig and dancing around with a cowbell. And so that's ultimately what really broke everybody. And Christopher Walken, who is a guy that's been in a ton of movies, a guy that has won an Academy Award, has been in some classic films, says that now, he very rarely gets quoted from any of his movies. Whenever he's walking down the street, it's usually someone screaming, "More cowbell." So this Academy Award-winning actor who's been in some of the most critically acclaimed and classic movies of all time, has had a career that spanned like 40-something years, is now best known for, and he will be known for, and remembered for the "More cowbell" sketch. So that's how a classic sketch gets done. That's what happens. You know, it's weird how they start. It's weird which ones take off. You never know, as the article says, you never know what people are going to respond to. But I want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite sketches in SNL history? Because there are so many to choose from. And I do have a list here that a website put together of the 30 funniest SNL sketches. And we want to hear from you guys. What do you think? 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. Text situation is still down, so call us on the line here, and we'll get you on the air. What are the funniest sketches that you've ever seen on SNL? And what are your favorites? And we'll go down the list. I have a ton. You know, being the SNL fanatic that I am, and been watching it, you know, like I've said several times, I've been watching it since 1975. I have a ton of sketches that I love, that I think are brilliant and funny. And we'll reminisce and talk about the best sketches in SNL history and the funniest ones with you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we'll get to your favorite and funniest SNL sketches right after we break here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. It is Tuesday. That means 2 for Tuesday. You may do for Tuesday. That wraps up the U2 2 for Tuesday. We are experiencing some technical difficulties with our text service. It's down, so we are not receiving your texts. So if you want to participate in the show, you know, normally we have the lovely convenience of having texts that you guys can contribute and I can read, and that way you can participate in the show without actually calling in. But that service is, for some reason, it's down. So if you want to call in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And you can call in and make a 2 for Tuesday request if you so want to. Okay. We are talking, I just gave you sort of the background and the history of one of the classic SNL sketches of all time, and that, of course, is More Cowbell, which aired in April of 2000 and has since become sort of a legendary sketch and considered one of the funniest of all time. And it was a fun backstory about how, you know, the sketch came to be and what the reaction was initially and how it got cut so many times that Will Ferrell tried to present it. And then what it ended up being, which is a classic, and how it actually affected Blue Oyster Cult, the actual band. So I love the backstory to that. So that got me to thinking about, there are so many other sketches over the many, many, many years that SNL has been on that are hilarious. And so what do you guys think? What are your favorites? What are the funniest sketches in SNL history? 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here's Orlando on WGN. Hi, Orlando.
Hi, Nick.
Hi.
You're awesome. Hey, I have a SNL moment I remember. It was with Jimmy Fallon. I'm not a big Jimmy Fallon fan. But it was him and Mick Jagger where he's looking in the mirror.
Right.
He's acting like he's looking in the mirror.
Right.
That was awesome, dude.
Yeah, that was Jimmy Fallon doing his Mick Jagger impression in front of a mirror, so it looks like they're doing the same thing and they're talking to each other. And yeah, actually, what happened there was that, you know, Mick Jagger was going to be on, and they wanted to do a sketch with him, and they were pitching all kinds of ideas to Mick Jagger during, you know, during the writers' meetings. And Mick Jagger kept, you know, saying, no, I don't think that's funny. No, I don't think that's funny. And there were like, you know, there were like seven people in the room who were pitching ideas to Mick Jagger for sketch ideas for him. And he turned down every one of them. And then earlier, like in that day, Jimmy Fallon pitched that idea of doing the mirror thing to Lorne Michaels, and Lorne Michaels shot it down. Lorne Michaels said, no, it's stupid, we're not going to do it. But then when he during the meeting, he actually pitched it to Mick Jagger, and Mick Jagger goes, yeah, that's what I want to do. So that's another one of those sketches that wouldn't have seen the airtime had it not been for Mick Jagger saying, yes, that's the one I want to do. So
yeah, he was real professional about that, Mick Jagger. He didn't like crack a smile or anything.
Oh, it was very funny. It was very funny. And I, you know, I maintain that Jimmy Fallon was funny on SNL. He sucks on the Tonight Show. So he's a terrible talk show host. But he was. I thought he was funny on SNL, and I actually thought he did a good job on Update too. So all right, Orlando.
Okay,
thanks,
dude.
Take care.
Peace out.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about your favorite sketches. What are the funniest sketches that you've seen on SNL? Let's see here. Steve on WGN. Hi, Steve.
Hey, I'm going to be dating myself a little bit, but it was a sketch with Richard Pryor and Chevy Chase, and they were doing a word association. The sketch is not politically correct.
No, it's not.
I remember it vividly.
No, that's one of the greatest sketches in the history of SNL. It's the word association where Chevy Chase is interviewing Richard Pryor for a job and starts throwing racially offensive words at him, and they battle back and forth with it. And it is brilliant. It's really brilliant and really, really, really funny. And I remember, you know, it's something that you can't put on television now. There's no way you could get away with it. Because Chevy Chase drops the N-word during it. But I remember back when Richard Pryor passed away, during Weekend Update, they played that sketch uncut. They played the whole thing and without censoring it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was the night that Richard Pryor passed away. They were like, this is one of the best sketches that we've ever had. It was that's a landmark sketch. It really is. And Pryor had a writing credit that night, the night he hosted SNL back in the 70s. He wrote a bunch of sketches. He wrote a bunch of that stuff, and he helped write that sketch. It's a classic one. It's an absolute classic.
Okay, I just wanted to toss it in there.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Yeah, the word association. I remember watching it, man. I remember because Pryor is so funny, especially at the end of that sketch. He's so funny. That was a classic, absolute classic. All right, here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Greetings from Cleveland. Three sketches I want to discuss tonight. Okay, two of them were from Kyle MacLachlan hosting the show around 1992 or so.
Sprockets?
That's one of them. Yeah. He played the equally weird friend of Mike Myers, who brought in a show called Germany's Most Disturbing Home Videos.
Right, right.
And he sold all sorts of weird stuff. It was funny. And then there was the Twin Peaks sketch where he played a version of Dale Cooper, who was having so much fun playing detective that he didn't want to solve the murder of Laura Palmer, even though Leo Johnson kept confessing to him.
Yeah. Yep.
And then the third one, this is less of a sketch than a commercial parody. It aired when Patrick Stewart was hosting. You remember the movie Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so now you can relive the excitement of Philadelphia in your home. Philadelphia action figures.
Right.
And it had stuff like Tom Hanks and Jason Robards figures having a laser sword duel in a courtroom where the jurors were Star Wars aliens. Tom Hanks' boyfriend had transforming battle armor and a dino buddy, and it was just so off the wall and so accurate to what toy commercials are really like that. I just thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, very funny. Very, very funny. Those are good ones. Thanks, Mark.
Have a good show.
All right, we got a break here. We got a bunch of people who are calling in. The phone lines are lit up here. Got a couple lines open, though, if you want to get in here. Again, our text situation is down, but you can call in right now and participate in what do you think is the funniest or some of your favorite SNL sketches of all time. Again, there's a ton to choose from. 312-981-7200. And we'll take your calls and get back to the SNL comedy sketches right after we break for the news, which is next. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Our text situation is still down, but the phone lines are open. If you want to participate in 2 for Tuesday, 312-981-7200. And also, we're talking about your favorite and the funniest SNL sketches of all time. 312-981-7200. Who made that request?
This is a nice, unique name, Squat.
Oh, Squat. Yes, he's a regular.
That's a wonderful name.
Well, he did explain how he got that name, and it involves what you think it involves. So
sounds like it involves what I think it involves.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. So, welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we are talking about the funniest sketches in SNL history. And I'm looking at someone at Best Life put together a list and talked about some of their sketches, and they put down here the Wild and Crazy Guys sketches with Steve Martin and Dan Aykroyd as the two immigrants hoping to make time with some beautiful American foxes. They're pretty confident in their chances, viewing that according to Yortuk, played by Dan Aykroyd, there are no other pair of Czech brothers who cruise and swing so successfully in tight slacks. So, that's obviously, they did that more than one time, and it was always funny. It was always funny. That was one of those, in the early days of SNL, that was, you know, those were two of the characters that really, really, really took off and became, you know, recurring characters. And, you know, Steve Martin hosted so many times that there was a period of time where people, they thought that Steve Martin was actually a cast member, but in fact he was just a host, but he hosted many, many, many times and became like a staple on the show and had, you know, recurring characters of his own. But those two brothers were considered, you know, some of the funniest sketches they've ever done. And if you want to jump in here, we got a couple of lines open. What are your favorite and funniest sketches in SNL history? 312-981-7200. Here's Doc on WGN. Hey, Doc.
Hey, good morning. Great topic.
Thank you, man.
Hey, my second choice, not a sketch, but one of the film numbers, Justin Timberlake, Junk in a Box.
Oh, sure.
But my favorite is from the last couple of years, Kate McKinnon, Ryan Gosling, Cecily Strong. They're all three playing characters who are being interviewed about being taken on board a UFO. And Cecily Strong is like real meek, you know.
Yeah.
They bathed me in soft light. They were as tender as if I were a newborn.
Yeah.
Gosling says the same thing. They get to McKinnon. Her legs cocked up in the air. Her legs are apart. And she starts describing what would be like a blank bang, you know, rhymes with bang.
Yeah.
And she has slang for her naughty bits.
Yeah.
And she's just back to back to back rhyming terms for her most adjacent apertures.
Yeah.
And Gosling, everybody in the skit is losing it, but Gosling's sitting next to her. He's crying. He's got his hands over his mouth.
Yeah.
At one point, she stands him up and bends him over to demonstrate something.
Yeah. Well, they did it twice. They did that sketch twice with Gosling. And
I never stand up the second time too.
Oh, and the second time was when she made him stand up and she started playing with his butt. And that was when he was gone and Gosling was just gone. Well, the thing about Gosling though, Doc, is that he breaks a lot when he hosts. You know what I mean? Cuz he's clearly having a great time. But he lost it during that the first time they did that sketch, and McKinnon is hilarious in that sketch.
She is.
Yeah, she's great.
Probably the only thing funny from the last few years, I think.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Hey, Doc, by the way, I got the box of JK Livin' clothes, and I appreciate that, man.
any keepers in there.
Yeah, absolutely, my friend. I appreciate that, Doc. Thanks, buddy.
All right, man.
All right, see ya. There you go. Yeah, no, that sketch is hilarious. The people describing them being abducted by aliens and Kate McKinnon and Moynihan was in it the first time. It was Bobby Moynihan and Adie Bryant were the government officials who were, you know, asking them questions about being abducted by aliens. And Kate McKinnon just kept getting funnier and funnier and funnier during that sketch, and Gosling lost it. Gosling just lost it. Again, great sketch. Really, really funny. Here's Deborah on WGN. Hi, Deborah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I did not see this one on SNL because I don't watch the show, but it is from there. I saw it on the internet, which is Maya Rudolph playing Beyonce.
Oh, yeah. Well, she did that. That was, again, that was a recurring character. She did it a bunch of times. She played Beyonce probably 12, 15 times during her stay on SNL.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I see.
Yeah. That was a recurring. It was a recurring impression that she did, and she was very funny, very, very funny.
Very much so. She happens to be the daughter of a friend of mine who is deceased, Minnie Riperton, the singer.
Yeah, you knew Minnie Riperton?
Yes, I did. Her entire family.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, she was an amazing singer. Died too young. Way too young.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So, yeah, she's great. Maya Rudolph got, yeah, and again, Maya Rudolph has an unbelievable voice, too. She definitely inherits it. She's great. Okay, Deborah, thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. Here is Frank on WGN. Hi, Frank.
Joe Pesci and Bensonhurst dating game. Oh, so funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good one.
It's said.
Yeah.
That Chris
was,
Rock.
Yeah. Yeah, that was good. Okay. All right. Thanks, Frank. There you go. let's see. Here's Peter on WGN. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
About 20 years ago, they used to repeat episodes like at 3 in the morning on Saturday night, Sunday morning, which I thought was a great idea. And so when they had Bill Murray, he was officiating at a wake or funeral in a funeral home, and he turned out to be a magician, and he ended up sawing the casket in half. I don't. You ever seen that one?
I do not. Boy, that's not ringing a bell.
Yeah, I tried Googling, you know, elements, you know, that I just mentioned, and I can't come up with anything.
You sure it was Bill Murray?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, all right. All right, no, I don't. That one doesn't ring a bell for me, Peter.
I was wondering if he came back, and when he was hosting a couple of times in the 80s, maybe he did it, but
yeah,
I don't.
Well, that one doesn't ring a bell, but, you know, maybe we can look that one up. And see if it's out there somewhere. All right, Peter.
All right,
thanks.
I'll keep listening.
Take care. By the way, phone lines are open if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Here's Kurt on WGN. Hi, Kurt.
Hi. Morning. Two skits that I recall from the original cast were quite a while ago. Would be the first time that Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi came out with their Killer Bees.
Yeah, the thing about the Killer Bees, Belushi hated those sketches, hated them, and he purposely would try to sabotage the sketch by moving his head around so that the antenna would make weird shapes. And he hated it. He hated those sketches, and he made it abundantly clear that he hated them too.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, hated them.
Yeah, the other one, classic one that I remember, I heard you saying Falling Off Your Couch Laughing, was the first time I saw Dan Aykroyd dressed up in drag as Julia Child.
Well, that's one of the classic.
Cutting his finger.
Yeah, that's one of the classic moments. That was one of the classic sketches where the blood shooting out all over the place. And yeah, that was. I remember watching that live and just like falling off the couch laughing. That is a classic one. No question about it.
Yeah, and the newer one, I think Chris Farley came up with that classic character of his motivational speaker.
Well,
too.
Sure. Yeah. Matt Foley. I mean, one of the that's you know, the first time that he did Matt Foley, on SNL is one of the classic sketches of all time, one of the greatest sketches of all time. And and of course, David Spade and Christina Applegate was the host. They're both losing it.
Yeah, because I think falling on that table and breaking it was purely accidental.
Well,
and
they
went with it, as far as I know.
No, it was planned, but nobody, Chris Farley didn't tell anybody. He swapped out a real coffee table for a breakaway table, and he told the guys that he was going to jump through the table, but don't tell anybody on stage. So when he goes through that table, that was a plan. You know, he talked to the prop guys and everything. He talked to the director. Everybody knew about it except those four other people on stage. And of course, the only person who didn't break was Phil Hartman, because Phil Hartman was a consummate professional, and he never broke.
Yes,
never broke. So
that's another challenge that went by way too soon. Both those guys, Phil and Brett,
both of them, man, just unbelievable. All right, Kurt, thanks, man.
U.S. Thanks. Have a good morning.
All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. Yeah, no, that Matt Foley thing, down in a, you know, living in a van down by the river, that is just that's classic. And I remember the first time. I saw that, man. Oh man, just on the floor laughing. And they did it a couple of more times, and it wasn't as funny as the very first time. It was funny. It was funny because the character is really funny. But it wasn't. I mean, that the first time he did that character, that very first time with David Spade and Christina Applegate, is just still to this day, I think, one of the funniest sketches they've ever done on SNL. So, all right, there are a ton more here, and we'll talk about some of them. What are your favorites? What are the best sketches ever? What are the funniest sketches? 312-981-7200. We're talking SNL. So let's get back to it. Again, we're having a little trouble with our texts. They're not coming through, so you got to call us. 312-981-7200, and also for Two for Tuesday requests, if you want to get those in, 312-981-7200. More SNL talk, best sketches ever, right after we break here for the weather. Today, the Springfield returns as sunshine emerges as the early morning temperatures hover around the mid-40s, but we're able to get into the mid or upper 60s later. Colder overnight with fog patches, especially near the lake. For tomorrow, chance of AM showers or thunderstorms, then partly to mostly cloudy. Highs around 70 with a chance of thunderstorms overnight. For Thursday, mild and unsettled. Temperatures will rise to about 70, and extensive cloud coverage will happen. A possibility of showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy and colder at night. And then for Friday, windy and colder. Clouds dominate the area skies with intermittent sprinkles possible. Lows in the mid-50s. It is currently 49 degrees at O'Hare. It is 49 degrees at Midway. 51 degrees at the lakefront. Okay, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, more SNL sketches. What are your favorites? Which ones do you think are the funniest? Give us a call right now, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Two for Tuesday continues. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. And you want to get your requests in. Our text lines are still down, but phone lines are open. You can call in at 312-981-7200 if you want to make a Two for Tuesday request. Get them in there. And also, we're talking about SNL sketches. Which ones are your favorites? Which ones make you laugh? The funniest SNL sketches of all time. And there are a lot to choose from, and we're barely scratching the surface, so we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, let's get back to the phone lines and get back to the SNL sketch talk at 312-981-7200. Here's Roosevelt on WGN. Hi, Roosevelt.
Hey, Nick. How you doing this morning? Thank you.
All right.
I got several of them. You guys mentioned Chris Farley, and the one that came right away was the Chippendales with
Patrick Swayze.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
That is one of the that's also one of the best Chris Farley sketches of all time, man.
Also, I was thinking of the original cast and Joe Cocker.
Oh man.
Yeah. That one was at the time. Oh, it was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with Belushi doing Joe Cocker next to Joe Cocker.
He was perfect. Yeah. I mean, and when he fell down, that was that did it. That was enough, you know. Yeah.
Very funny.
Also, I came up with Celebrity Jeopardy. Also, that one. Who was that guy?
It's Sean Connery.
Sean Connery.
Yeah,
trying to think of the actor, Sean Connery. And then one of them that is kind of my favorite is the Christmas one with what's his name? Jimmy Fallon. He's always breaking, you know, and he's playing the piano.
Oh, right. I wish it was Christmas Today.
It's hilarious. That's one of my favorites. That's one of my.
Well, they did that. That was another 12:50 thing that they did. They had, you know, they just said, this is really stupid. You guys are going to do it at the end of the show in the 12:50 yeah. slot. And it became huge, and they did it every year at Christmas time.
Oh God! When I seen that, let's not forget the Michael Jordan one too. Michael Jordan with Al Franken.
Yeah, Stuart Smiley.
Michael Jordan. Jordan couldn't hold it.
Daily affirmation. That was when Michael Jordan. That was by the way, when that episode. That Michael Jordan hosted in 1991 was one of the best, one of the most consistent and best SNL episodes of that era, because the musical guest was Public Enemy. That's when Jesse Jackson was on and read Green Eggs and Ham on Weekend Update.
I remember that. Yeah,
and the super fans, they did the super fans with Jordan.
Yeah,
I mean that was a great episode. I mean that was the season premiere of 1991-92, and that was a great episode. Lots of great stuff in that one.
And then Wayne's World, of course.
Yeah, Wayne's World. Everybody loves Wayne's World. Yep. All right. Thank you, Roosevelt.
Thank you.
All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking about SNL and SNL sketches, and we would love to hear from you. What are some of your favorites? What are some of the funniest SNL sketches? Phone lines are open. Call us right now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You know, we haven't mentioned one of the more recent ones from a couple of years ago, and that is David S. Pumpkins, the Tom Hanks episode, and that aired the night that aired was the night that the Cubs won the pennant, and we're going to go to the World Series, and they won the pennant, and then there was like a whole bunch of, you know, like celebration and, you know, post game. Highlights and post game celebration, all that stuff, and I watched all of that. So I didn't get to SNL until later that night. You know, normally I watch SNL live, but I didn't get it. I wanted to watch all the Cubs stuff. I mean, you know, the Cubs actually got to the World Series that night. They won the pennant, and I was an emotional wreck because it was a big deal. You know, that the Cubs made it to the World Series, and I'm sitting in my apartment watching this actually unfold. The Cubs, my God, are going to the World Series. And then Tom Hanks was the host that night of SNL, and they did David S. Pumpkins. And it's one of the goofiest sketches ever. Here's what they say, a little behind-the-scenes thing. It says, it's hard to believe that Tom Hanks was initially reluctant about doing the David S. Pumpkins sketch. We get it. On paper, it makes no sense. But it's comedy surrealism at its best. Who the heck is David S. Pumpkins anyway? Why is he featured in 73 of the Haunted Elevator's 100 floors? We may never know for sure. So there you go. And I, you know, Moynihan came up with that sketch. He and another writer came up with that sketch. And again, when they pitched it to Tom Hanks, he was like, "All right, I'll do it. I don't get it." That is another one of those things that absolutely took off. Like, David S. Pumpkins became a thing, and it's hysterical. It's absolutely hilarious, and you know, and the dancing skeletons and just the whole. I don't know what Tom Hanks is doing, and Kenan Thompson as the elevator operator is really funny on it. Everybody's really funny on it. any questions? Yes, several. Beck Bennett, Kate McKinnon, and it's It's Mikey Day and Bobby Moynihan are the dancing skeletons. It's hysterical, and it really did come out of nowhere. And it's one of those sketches that's just another one that's just really weird, and like you can't kind of explain, you know, why it's so funny. It's like all of What's Up With That. Like every time there's a What's Up With That. Like the very first What's Up With That. I remember watching the very first What's Up With That with Kenan Thompson. And I was laughing my butt off during it. And my ex-wife and I watched it. And we, like, when it was over, we were like, okay, that was really one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. That was really stupid. Wasn't that really stupid? Why did we laugh as hard as we possibly could during that? And then every time they did What's Up With That, it was funny every single time. And then those supporting characters, Sudeikis with the red tracksuit on, doing the running man and dancing in the background. The always smiling, having a great time, long-haired saxophone player played by Fred Armisen. The backup singers, all the other cameos that come in when they're doing the song. And then, of course, Bill Hader as Lindsey Buckingham. I mean, everything about What's Up With That was fantastic. And again, really dumb. Like, if you think about it, it's really dumb. Yeah. Somebody, Mitch made a contribution here. And Eddie Murphy, James Brown, Hot Tub. Yeah. That is classic, too. There's another Eddie Murphy one that I wanted to mention here. Eddie Murphy, at one point, Eddie Murphy was carrying the show. And it was they were in a very, 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 very sketchy time period where the rest of the cast was not very strong. And essentially, Eddie Murphy owned that show. Like, he came in and he took charge. He was only like 18 or 19 when he got cast on that show. So he was just a kid. And he dominated that show. Every week, he was clearly the highlight of that show, stealing it almost entirely. But the other one that I wanted to mention that involves Eddie Murphy, you know, besides James Brown Hot Tub, which, of course, legendary, classic, people love it, and it's still hilarious. But one of mine is the short film they did, White Like Me, where Eddie Murphy got into whiteface and saw what it was like to be a white person for a day. So he went out to New York and tried to buy a newspaper and they gave it to him for free. When he got on the bus, when the last black patron on the bus left, they started having a party and they brought out hors d'oeuvres and drinks and stuff for the white people that were left on the bus. It was really, really funny. And really, 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 really socially hilarious. So that's a great one. White Like Me. Yeah, that's, again, a lot of these, by the way, are available online. If you've not seen some of these, look them up on YouTube. You can have a field day with this stuff. Or on Hulu. Hulu, they've got all that stuff, too. All right. We're going to break. We got the news coming up next. And then after the news, more SNL sketches. What are your favorites? What are the funniest? 312-981-7200 right here on WGN.
Because she didn't want parades just passing by her. So she painted on a smile and took up with some clown. While she danced without a net upon the wire.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here until 5 a.m. It's Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Our texts are not working at the moment. They're still down, so you call in to participate and be a part of the show here, 2 for Tuesday, and also funniest and your favorite SNL sketches. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Who requested that, and what was that?
Oh, that was Sherry Basley, Don't Cry Out Loud, and that was a question from Deborah from Oaklawn.
Deborah. Okay, Deborah, there you go. 312-981-7200. Hey, Vic, you know, we're talking about sketches, SNL sketches, favorite SNL sketches. Do you have any? Besides, you know, obviously we talked about Cowbell. Do you have any other sketches that you love from SNL?
I didn't watch it as much as you guys do, to be honest with you. I don't have one that comes to mind. Anything with Chris Farley.
Anything with Chris Farley. Yeah, we talked about the van down by the river.
I would have to agree on that.
Yeah.
I'll double that.
Yeah. He was great. And, of course, the Chippendale sketch with him and him and Patrick Swayze auditioning for the Chippendales.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. That's my favorite.
And the lunch lady, when Adam Sandler did the lunch lady song, and he was dressed up as the lunch lady.
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm laughing because I just got a picture of Chris Farley dressed like the lunch lady in my head.
Well, I mean, he was funny as hell, man. I mean, he was really funny. And I could watch Tommy Boy 24/7, man. If there was a Tommy Boy channel, I'd subscribe to it.
It's nearly a perfect, right,
it's
movie.
Just it's ridiculous. Yeah. It's so funny. I mean, it's ridiculously funny. And it's got so many classic, you know, classic moments in it. It's so great.
If I had to pick one of my favorite scenes from Tommy Boy, it would probably be the one where they're getting some breakfast and he's talking about that mark. Hurts right here.
Not here or here, but right here. It's the big red mark across his face.
Oh, man. That kills me.
Yeah, and then the waitress comes up and goes, "Oh, what happened to you? What happened to your face?" Yeah. And he goes, "I knew it." Yeah, no. One of my favorites is when you know they keep showing them failing as they're trying to make sales. You know, like people just turning them down. You know, like the montage of them going into offices and people just saying no. And then there's the one where he's trying to the guy's got like a little antique couple of cars on his desk.
Right.
And he's like he's going, "Oh no, look, your brakes went out. And here comes the paddy wagon," and he sets the cars on fire and you know, like these guys like collectible cars that are on his desk. He sets the cars on fire and so he finishes it and David Spade is, you know, like beside himself, like, "I can't believe that he just did this." And then he stops and they're like, "Get out." And the guy, the boss, the guy they're trying to sell, "Get out." And so they get up to walk out and Chris Farley turns around. He's got a ticket in his hand and he leans in and he goes, "Do you validate?"
Right.
That's one of my favorite parts. That's one of my favorite. "Do you validate?"
So many.
It's hilarious.
I don't think there was one single scene where he's not cracking me up.
It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, a lot of people go to college for 8 years. Yeah, they're called doctors.
Right. And David Spade, I mean, can you pick a better?
Well,
I mean,
those guys had, you know, they had fantastic chemistry together.
Right.
You know what I mean? They did. And they were like really close friends, too. And you could see that. I didn't like Black Sheep, though. Black Sheep was terrible. Just a couple of laughs in Black Sheep, which was the follow-up. Yeah. But boy, oh boy. Yeah, Chris Farley was a funny guy. He was a funny, funny guy. So, all right. We're talking sketches here. Some of the best sketches. Now, obviously, you know, we have to talk about the digital shorts that the Lonely Island guys brought to the game. Andy Samberg and those guys. And Lazy Sunday being the big one. Lazy Sunday was the one that was the game changer. That was the one with Andy Samberg, Chris Parnell playing two white guys who are doing sort of gangster rap about going to see the Chronicles of Narnia. It was the second of the digital shorts. It was the second one. The first one was just called Lettuce, and it was Bill Hader and Andy Samberg sitting on a porch in New York eating heads of lettuce whole and talking about their lives. But then this second one, Lazy Sunday, the Chronicles of Narnia thing, it took off, and it became the first real big viral hit, and it pretty much put YouTube on the map. And it's, to this day, considered one of the best digital shorts of all time. And those were always a highlight. Andy Samberg, Lonely Island guys, the digital shorts were consistently good every week. They were always a sketch highlight every week during that time period when they were on. My favorite of all of the Lonely Island digital shorts, without question, is I Threw It on the Ground. That's the funniest, and to me, that's the funniest one. "I'm an adult!" I threw "Happy Birthday to the Ground." I mean, it's just, that's absolutely my favorite of all the digital shorts. And again, the digital shorts, constantly a highlight when Andy Samberg was on that show. Always a highlight. Very funny stuff. All right, 312-981-7200 is the number. Here's Peter on WGN. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Hi.
Do you remember the Coneheads?
Of course. Yeah.
We're from France?
Yeah. Too
many mass quantities.
Yep. They were classic. They did that several times, and they even made a movie out of it, which was not funny. But
made a movie of it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it sucked.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you're better off not knowing it because it was terrible. But, yeah, so... All right, Peter, thanks, buddy. The Coneheads, they were, you know, some very, you know, classic sketches back in the early days with the Coneheads. Great stuff. Here's Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right, what's up?
Hey, before I get to my point, can you do a public service announcement in the mornings? Tell people if they're not passing to stay out of left lane.
Yeah, but that's
I'd appreciate that.
That's a common complaint, Dan. I think we, you know what I mean? Yeah.
But anyway, that was Belushi when he was Captain Kirk, and they canceled the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just couldn't get over them canceling it, and he thought he was, you know, really Captain Kirk on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of the older ones I prefer. I don't watch too much of the new ones. I don't think it's that funny, but the older ones with Bill Murray and Aykroyd and Belushi and that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been watching it since day one, and to me, it's as funny now as it ever was because it was never perfect. If you go back, to those, you know, quote unquote glory days with Belushi and Bill Murray and Aykroyd and Gilda Radner, there were as many stinkers on those shows as there are now. Like they would have there were nights when they would have terrible sketches, but a lot of people wax poetically and wear the rose colored glasses and think that everything that they did in those days was funny, which is not the case.
All right, but yeah, the one guy that called before with Joe Cocker and Belushi, that was hysterical.
Yeah, classic. Yeah, very
yeah,
very
he was
good.
A good, yeah, very funny guy.
Okay, Dan, thanks, buddy.
All right, next figure.
Oh yeah, Joe Cocker. That Joe Cocker thing is really incredible. They have the real Joe Cocker standing next to John Belushi as he's doing an imitation of Joe Cocker. It's both really, really funny and also really uncomfortable to watch. Bruce left his thoughts here. Exorcist 2, the SNL sketch, that was with Richard Pryor, going back to that episode of Richard Pryor. And your mother sews socks that smell was one of the lines. Lorraine Newman played the possessed girl. And the bed is on my foot. The bed is on my foot. I'll say that episode that Richard Pryor hosted back then was classic, man. Just classic. There were lots of really good sketches. His opening monologue was brilliant. You know, and of course we mentioned a little bit earlier the incredible word association sketch with him and Chevy Chase, which is, you know, considered an absolute classic. Yeah. Here's Brent in Wisconsin on WGN. Hi, Brent.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How are you?
All right, man.
Cork soakers.
Oh, man.
Anything with JT in it.
Yeah. That was Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson was the host during the Cork soakers.
It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And she almost screwed up and said the bad word.
Yes, she did.
So that was great. Yeah, really good stuff. All right, Brent, thanks, man.
Have a good morning.
All right, bye. Man. Yeah. How about the classic point counterpoint with Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd? When Jane Curtin and Dan Aykroyd co-anchored Weekend Update, they would do point counterpoint. And of course, you know, his counterpoint would be Jane, you ignorant slut. And then he would start off. That became one of the many, 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 many catchphrases of the 70s era of SNL. All right, everybody hang on. We got a couple lines open if you want to jump in. It's 312-981-7200. You got to call in, but I think our text stuff is still down. Our texting is still not working. So you got to call in if you want to jump in. 312-981-7200. All right, here's your weather for today. Spring returns as sunshine emerges as early morning temps hover around the mid-40s, but we're able to reach the mid to upper 60s later. It'll be colder overnight with fog patches, especially near the lake. Tomorrow, chances of AM showers and thunderstorms, then partly and mostly cloudy. Highs around 70, chance of thunderstorms overnight. For Thursday, mild and unsettled. Temperatures rise to near 70 with extensive cloud cover and a possibility of showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy and colder at night. And then on Friday, windy and colder. Clouds will dominate the skies with intermittent sprinkles possible. Temps in the low 50s. It's currently 49 degrees at O'Hare. It's 49 at Midway, 51 degrees at the lakefront. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll come back and talk more SNL sketches that your favorites and which ones are funny and which ones do you love. There's a lot more to choose from here. We want to get you going here at 312-981-7200.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's right near.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here on Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday, wrapping up here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you would like to join us, our text issue is still happening. We are down, so you can't text us. We're not receiving any texts at the moment. But you can call us, and our phone lines are open at 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. And we are talking about great SNL sketches. Like, what are your favorite SNL sketches? Which ones are the funniest that you can recall? Here's a great one. Mom Jeans. This is the some of the commercial stuff that they do on SNL are really some of the highlights, and they do commercial parodies that are really, really funny, and Mom Jeans is a great one. Here's what they say about that. Some SNL sketches are timeless, like this 2003 commercial parody for Mom Jeans, a pair of denim pants that came with a 9-inch zipper and casual front pleats, cut generously, the voiceover tells you, to fit a mom's body. Some things never go out of fashion. That is hysterical. And of course it features, you know, they had some of the strongest women, you know, at that time on the show, and Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, Rachel Dratch, Maya Rudolph are all in that sketch. And it's really one of my favorites. I also like Oops, I Crapped My Pants, which is, is about, adult diapers. It's a commercial parody about adult diapers, which I also thought was really funny. Colon Blow, of course, is another classic. The commercial parodies, we could go on and on about how hilarious the some of the commercial parodies are that they've done in the past. So if you would like to join us, that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the greatest and the funniest and your favorite Saturday Night Live sketches of all time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Charlie on WGN. Hi, Charlie.
Hey. I like the ones when we had Janet Reno coming through the wall.
Yeah, well, you know, Will Ferrell played Janet Reno, and then
right.
Then the real Janet Reno showed up. And
I thought I had heard at the time that he was unaware that she was going to make an appearance on the show that night.
Oh, no, he knew.
He knew? Okay.
Yeah, he knew. He definitely knew, because they wrote the whole sketch with her in mind. And
okay, yeah, because I just love that one with the, when the people that they're poking fun at and all actually come on.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was great, and that was really funny when she showed up. And she had, you know, she had a great sense of humor about the whole thing. And, I mean, just the whole idea was just so bizarre. The Janet Reno dance party, like she hosted in a basement somewhere. She's hosting a dance party. It was just so bizarre. That's another, you know, Will Ferrell, Adam McKay thing. And those guys, two of the strangest sense of humors that they've ever had on that show. So, all right.
I agree.
Thank you, Charlie. Take care, buddy.
Have a good one.
All right. 312-981-7200. I have to bring up my favorite female cast member of all time, and I know that a lot of people, you know, don't agree with this and say it's Gilda Radner, and I love Gilda Radner, and I loved, they've had so many incredibly strong women on the show, and they do right now. They have some really, really great women, including Heidi Gardner, who I think last season made the best and strongest debut of any cast member on Saturday Night Live history. She was unbelievably strong last year, and she's doing great work this year, although the writing is much worse this year than it was last year. But Molly Shannon is my favorite female cast member of all time. You know, I think she's just so incredibly funny, and she's fearless in the comedy that she's willing to do and the kind of physical stuff that she's willing to do. Mary Catherine Gallagher is one of my favorite SNL characters of all time, particularly the episode with Gwyneth Paltrow. Gwyneth Paltrow was the host, and they were part of a gang, and Mary Catherine Gallagher wanted to join the gang, and they had to do some initiation. She had to do some initiation stuff in order to be part of the gang. That was my favorite Mary Catherine Gallagher sketch. And I think they're all great. The one with Gabriel Byrne is great. The one with Rosie O'Donnell is great. And I just loved everything that she did. The Joyologist that she would do on the talk show with Anna Gasteyer. Molly Shannon doing The Joyologist. Fantastic. Sally O'Malley, I'm 50 years old. I mean, Molly Shannon, I just think is just brilliant, and she just makes me laugh every single time I see her, and I think she's responsible for some of the funniest sketches that we've ever seen on SNL. So, let's see. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right, man.
Yeah, I go back. I haven't watched SNL regularly in ages, but back when it first came on, the Frank and Davis skits used to always get me.
Loved them. Absolutely loved them, yeah.
The couple I want to mention are the two by Eddie Murphy, the Kill My Landlord skit,
yeah,
and the Undercover White Man.
Yeah, I mentioned White Like Me earlier.
Oh, okay.
Which is one of the greatest, one of my favorite things that's ever been on SNL. My favorite moment of that, Mike, is when the last black passenger on the bus leaves.
Gets off the bus.
Yeah. And they have a party and they bring out hors d'oeuvres and drinks and stuff. Go ahead, take it. You don't have to pay for it. But Kill My Landlord is the poet laureate who's in prison.
Exactly.
It's C-I-L-L, my landlord. That was at the time, Mike, when he was dominating that show. Like it was just it was the Eddie Murphy show at that point.
Essentially,
yeah. Well, actually, you know what? Joe Piscopo too. They were both really funny on the show. They would steal it every week. And like when they did the when he did Sinatra and Eddie Murphy.
Sinatra and Stevie Wonder.
Oh my God! Classic. Yeah. Good stuff.
One more, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. This is like Martin Short and Harry Shearer when they were the swim team.
Oh my God!
I can't swim.
I'm not a very strong swimmer. That's the synchronized swimming. Oh my God! Yeah, that is really, really that's classic. You know that what's amazing. I mentioned this before when we were talking about SNL is that. Martin Short, Harry Shearer was on for many years, but Martin Short and Christopher Guest and Billy Crystal and some of the other guys, they were only on for one season.
Yeah, that was a season with Gene Demanian producing, I think.
And but the thing is, they made such a strong impression, you know, with their characters, and the material was so strong and they're so good that I think people think they were on for five or six seasons, you know.
Right.
But the quality of their performances in the writing at that time was, you know, because you know, you got guys like Martin Short, Harry Shearer, Christopher Guest, and you know, Billy Crystal. These are great seasoned performers who know how to do that kind of stuff. So
right.
Great stuff. All right, Mike, thanks, man.
All right, Nick, take care.
All right, you too. 312-981-7200. Chris at Midway says the sweaty balls. Yeah, that's legendary. That is legendary. Alec Baldwin on Delicious Dish, which is also one of my favorite characters that Molly Shannon does with Anna Gasteyer. And I mean, sweaty balls has just gone down as a classic. It's a, you know, and that's another thing that Alec Baldwin is known for. Is that, you know, like, here's another guy who's been nominated for Academy Awards, been in a bunch of classic movies, worked with great directors, and he gets, you know, he gets the sweaty balls quote thrown at him all the time. That's what happens, man, when you actually end up on SNL in an iconic sketch. That's what people are going to remember. So, all right, why don't we take a break here for the news, and when we come back, we'll talk more about our favorite sketches in Saturday Night Live history. 312-981-7200. A couple phone lines are open. Get in here now. The news is coming up after this.
I should have known you bid me farewell. There's a lesson to be learned from this, and I learned it very well. Now I know you're not the only starfish in the sea. If I never hear your name again, it's all the same to me. And I think it's gonna be alright.
Alright.
Yeah, the worst is over now, the morning.
Welcome back. Red Rubber Ball. Man, I haven't heard this song in a long, long time. Who requested this?
This is Jay from Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Jay from Kenosha. All right. We get one more song in here for Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. We're still having issues with the text situation. We're not receiving them, so you should call us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We are talking about your favorite and funniest SNL sketches. Which ones stand out for you? Which ones are your favorites? This all started because somebody wrote an article about the history of the More Cowbell sketch, which, you know, is considered to be one of the more classic sketches in the history of SNL. And they wrote a really funny and informative little history about how it started and how Will Ferrell, you know, brought it to the table several times before it actually got on TV, and then what happened during the sketch, and you know, what has happened since. That's how it started. So now we're jumping into some of our favorite and funniest sketches of all time. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And let's see, here is Don on WGN. Hi, Don.
Hey, Nick, how you doing this morning?
All right, what's up?
Well, I'll give you three. I gave your producer one, but I'll warm you up with two other ones. The first one is the drool bucket sketch with Michael Palin.
Yeah.
And I think in the same episode was Dan Aykroyd doing Julia Child.
Yeah, I think that was the same. I think that was the same episode. We mentioned the Julia Child bit a little earlier because that's just such a classic. Such a classic.
And go ahead. My absolute favorite that is almost impossible to find anywhere, the Meat Wagon commercial.
You remind me of the Meat Wagon commercial.
The Meat Wagon commercial was a little matchbox ambulance.
Oh, yeah.
And they had the Hot Wheels get in a crash, and this thing came and cleaned up the meat.
I totally remember that now. That's right.
Yeah. That's the most gruesome commercial I've ever seen in my life. And I haven't even seen it in reruns.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that one must be difficult to find, but I totally remember it. It was hilarious.
That was in the first couple seasons. I mean, I know it goes way back, because that's back in the days when I used to get in trouble. Mom and Dad had come home, and my brothers and I would be up watching SNL.
Yeah.
And my dad would just be like, it's midnight. Why are you still up?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, very cool. All right, Don, thanks, buddy.
Great show, Nick.
Thank you, pal. I forgot about the Meat Wagon sketch. That is a great one. Here's Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
How you doing?
All right. What's up?
Eddie Murphy, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood.
Yeah, Mr. Robinson's Neighborhood. This is how we answer the door in my neighborhood, boys and girls. Who is it?
And I'll tell you, another one was the church lady.
Yeah, the church lady with Dana Carvey. That became a classic and a catchphrase. Isn't that special and all that stuff? Yeah.
By the way, I want to tell you, I'm listening to you. I listen every night, every week. Harrison, Arkansas.
Oh man. Okay. Are you listening? Are you listening online or listening on the radio?
On the radio. Huh? You can't listen online really, because I guess you could, but it's about a 2-minute delay, maybe a little longer.
Ah, yeah, no, there is a delay, but you can listen. You can listen anyway. I'm glad that you're listening. Thank you.
And let me tell you this. I'm listening on a GE Super Radio 3 that I bought because of Steve and Johnny years ago.
Yeah, a lot of people bought those radios because of Steve and Johnny. Absolutely, and they still work.
And did you know this one here? Here in Harrison, in the wintertime, several days in the wintertime when it's cold and the sun is at a low angle, I can get WGN in the daytime all day long.
There you go. All right. Very cool. All right, Steve, thanks for the call.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Here is Jimmy on WGN. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, Nick, how you doing? There's a couple of great, great skits that often kind of fly under the radar when people talk about the typical classic ones that everybody knows. These two skits have my wife and I saying these catchphrases all the time, usually during sporting events. First one is Andy Samberg plays like a Make-A-Wish kid or something who's allowed to be in the broadcast booth of a football game, and it's clear that somebody has fed him a single line to make it seem like he knows what's going on with the game. I'm sure you know what the line is.
The line is move the chains, or what's
that'll move the chains. And then the announcers are so excited, they're like, oh yeah, that's right, Timmy, or whatever his name was. And then he just continues to say that line for every single play, and they get more and more frustrated. You know,
there's a
fumble, that'll move the chains,
that'll move the chains. So, that's right.
We say that during so many football games that we watch. And then another great one, sports related, actually, is, and I don't think this could have been pulled off with any other guest host, and was Ray Romano.
Oh my god!
Brilliant.
Oh my god!
Tim Meadows,
the ESPN, Sports Center, the Sports Center. Sweet.
He's trying his hardest to give a catchphrase like Stuart Scott has his famous catchphrases, and they go to commercial breaks all the time, and Tim Meadows is just like, "What are you doing, man? He can't steal my line," so he's trying his best to come up with his own lines. Sweet sassy molasses.
Sweet sassy molasses is a sweet sassy molasses.
Yeah, and hey, don't shoot that puck up my pooper.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else but Ray Romano could have pulled that off.
No, it's a great. I mean, that's a great sketch. That's a really really funny sketch, and especially if at that time you were watching SportsCenter on a regular basis, because everybody had, you know, some sort of snappy line and catchphrase that they would throw out during the coverage of the highlights and stuff. Everybody did.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very funny. All right, Jimmy, thanks, man.
Thanks, Nick.
All right. I got to mention, before we jump back to the phones, I got to mention Debbie Downer. Now, Debbie Downer has not been mentioned yet. This is Rachel Dratch's character. She's the one who brings up, you know, feline AIDS. And everybody's trying to have a good time, and she keeps talking about depressing things and bringing up sad things and bringing everybody down. So the character itself is really funny. They've done it several times, but the first time they did it, the very first time they did it, back in 2005, when Lindsay Lohan was the host of the show. This was back when Lindsay Lohan was awesome. The first time they did it, where it was all set at Disney World, like the happiest place on earth, and they've got a family reunion, and everybody's talking about how much fun they're going to have, and she keeps bringing up really depressing things. The sketch went off the rails. The sketch went off the rails, and everybody was busting out laughing, and it was Rachel Dratch who started the whole thing. Like, she was the first one to break, and she could not get it back together. And Rachel Dratch was interviewed about this, because it's since become a classic, you know, it's since become a classic sketch. And it was obviously it's one of those things about live TV. You never know what's going to happen. And everybody pretty much, she could not get it back together. She really just couldn't. And everybody else was breaking and like completely losing it, including Lindsay Lohan, who was breaking along with everybody else. And in fact, just walked off the stage at one point. Like, she just got up and walked off the stage. So I remember watching it, I think the worst I've ever seen anybody break any sketch go off the rails like that. That's probably the worst I've ever seen. in terms of trying to keep it together and not being able to keep it together. And what's funny is they interviewed Rachel Dratch about this on, I think it was one of the anniversary shows, because it, you know, like the Debbie Downer, the very first Debbie Downer sketch has gone down in history as one of a, you know, one of the classics, because one, it was funny, and two, everybody completely lost it on stage. But she said that she was really going to be mad because Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sanz were both in that sketch, and Jimmy Fallon and Horatio Sanz, are known for breaking each other up on stage. Like they break all the time. They laugh all the time. They break character and they laugh. And it got to the point where it was almost like, you know, your Harvey Korman, Tim Conway kind of a thing, where it seemed like, okay, that's enough of this. You guys, you don't have to, you know, we know that your shtick is to make each other laugh. And evidently during dress rehearsal, when they performed the first Debbie Downer during dress rehearsal, they did just that. Fallon and Horatio Sanz, they goofed around and they started to break and they started to laugh. You know, and so Rachel Dratch was quoted as saying that before they did it on the live show, she was like, "You guys don't break. Don't do it." And she was getting angry. She was going to be angry because this was like her sketch. You know, she was debuting this new character that she came up with, and she really wanted it to go well, and she really wanted it to be funny and to work. And she was nervous that these two goofballs, Fallon and Sanz, were going to break and ruin the sketch. That she was like really worried. And then she's the one who screwed up. She's the first one who broke. And she's like, I felt terrible for, you know, thinking that these guys were going to be unprofessional, and laugh. And, but it was Rachel Dratch who started the whole thing. And if you go back and watch that sketch, again, it's the very first Debbie Downer from 2005 with Lindsay Lohan, taking place at, Disney World. It's out there. It's on the internet. It's on Hulu. And I'm sure a lot of people have seen it already. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And to watch Dratch, like, lose it. And the best part is she, at one point towards the end of the sketch, she's completely derailed and she can't get it back together. But she has to say a specific line, and she says, she's laughing. And this is after the sketch is done at this point. She's laughing and she goes, "Well, it's official." There's a pause. She goes, "I can't have children." And then she starts laughing, and everybody at the table, like, could just completely loses it. It's great. And every time they do Debbie Downer, it's funny, but it was pretty spectacular and special the first time they did it. All right. Everybody hang on. Phone lines are jammed up here. We're going to get the weather in here. We'll take a break and we'll come back and wrap up the show and wrap up the SNL sketch conversation here. So today, spring returns as sunshine emerges, as early morning temps will hover around the mid-40s, but are able to reach the mid to upper 60s later. But it will be colder overnight with fog patches, especially near the lake. Tomorrow, chance of AM showers and thunderstorms, and then partly to mostly cloudy. Highs around 70 with a chance of thunderstorms overnight. For Thursday, mild, unsettled. Temperatures rise to near 70 with extensive cloud cover and possibly showers and thunderstorms, partly cloudy and colder at night. And then Friday, windy and colder. Clouds will dominate area skies with intermittent sprinkles possible. Temps in the low 50s. Right now, 49 degrees at O'Hare, 49 at Midway, and 51 degrees at the lakefront. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the show and the conversation about SNL sketches. 312-981-7200.
It's much too groovy a summer's day to waste running around in the city. But
welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich coming up at 5 with the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right. We've been talking about SNL sketches that are funny, that are your favorites. Which ones make you laugh the most? 312-981-7200. I wanted to mention Toonce's The Driving Cat, which I thought was one of the funnier recurring sketches that they did in the early 90s and in the late 80s. You can't not mention Stefan. Bill Hader's incredible character that comes up on Weekend Update. You know, one of the funniest characters in SNL history. And every time he appeared on Weekend Update, it was really, really funny and really memorable. I've also mentioned just recently how much I love Heidi Gardner. I think Heidi Gardner is phenomenal on the show. And her character, Angel, which is every boxer's girlfriend from every boxing movie. You know, I'm taking my kids to my sisters. That whole thing, brilliant and hilarious every single time. The Spartan cheerleaders, Will Ferrell and Sherry O'Terry. Great sketches, every single one of those, every time, you know, really, really funny. Brian Fellow's Safari Planet, Tracy Morgan based that character on a high school friend of his ex-wife who was, quote, a gay man who imagined stuff in his head and thought that he knew everything. The sweetly innocent host, whose knowledge of animals was just slightly above that of a four-year-old, delights in observations like, I once saw a video of a monkey washing a cat. That's crazy. So those are just a few more that I wanted to mention here. Let's get back to the phones. Here is Chris on WGN. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right.
Hey, my favorite's already been mentioned, and that's What Up With That. But there was also another one Kenan did, maybe two or three times, where he was an older guy and he was selling videos. It was like something heating up the bedroom. What was the name of that character?
I can't remember the name of the character, but like it would be like you know, they would teach you like sexual positions and stuff.
Yeah, and Dip the Ladle was our family favorite.
Oh my God! I can't remember the character's name, but that they did that a few times. They did a few of those commercial parodies, and that was really funny. Kenan Thompson's funny, man.
He's our family favorite, for sure.
He now holds the record for being the longest tenured cast member. He's been there.
And who was it before? Tim Meadows?
It was Daryl Hammond, then Tim Meadows.
Okay.
Yeah, and Daryl Hammond, by the way, is still there, because when Don Pardo died, he took over. He does the announcement. He's the announcer on the show. That's Daryl Hammond.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the ones about the advertising, the parodies.
Yeah.
I never laugh so hard at the Rosetta Stone one, where they talk about all the languages you can learn, and at the very end of the commercial, it's middle-aged bald guys learning how to speak Thai.
Yeah.
I never laugh so hard in my life.
Yeah, it's hilarious. That's hilarious.
But as far as the women, I think you're right. My favorite's Molly Shannon, but I think Kate McKinnon is probably the strongest cast member ever.
Is she? Well, Kate McKinnon is great. I mean, she's absolutely great, and has been for the many years that she's been on the show now. I mean, you can always count on her to even if the sketch sucks, you can always count on her to at least get some laughs. You know what I mean? That's basically what she does every week.
But her alien abduction character,
Yeah.
Hey, I really appreciate you taking me. I never get a chance to call in because I'm always driving my truck, but today I've got 10 minutes, so
all right, cool.
I really appreciate it.
I'm glad you got on. Thanks, Chris.
Have a good day.
All right, buddy, you too. Let's see. Is this Will Vetta?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Will Vetta.
Hi. I was thinking of I think it was Will Ferrell and Anna Gasteyer, where they would go around with the organ. I don't know if they did inspirational speeches or...
Oh, yeah. Man, what were the couple's name? I can't remember the couple's name. But he had the bald wig out, he had the bald cap on, and they would do the song montages.
In a gym or a swimming event or something like that,
I think it was Mr. and Mrs. Culp, I think was their last name.
All right, yeah. That's the one I was thinking of, yeah.
Yeah, they're very funny. Very, very, very funny. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Right.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.
All right, bye. Let's see. Here is Steve on WGN. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Nick. Yeah, it's funny. She mentioned the Will Ferrell, Anna Gasteyer. We got a hot mic here. Hot mic.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it was. I like a couple that I really like was the one when Jagger was on two different times when he was playing. He was playing Keith Richards.
Oh,
and Mike
man.
Myers was Mick.
Yeah, that
Come
was.
On. Come on, Keith. That was like early '90s. They were talking about Ice Cube's Cop Killer.
Yeah, that was great. That was great.
What's
yeah.
next? Killing security guards?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really, and then he brings out that Mick playing Keith. He calls Mike Myers, Mick, you ignorant slut.
Yeah.
So he pulls the old point counterpoint out.
Right.
And the other time when Jagger's on there with Fallon and they're in the mirror.
Yeah.
And he's like, Fallon's doing Jagger, what you got? Pointing fingers. Pointing fingers is today.
Yeah.
It's a little stale. And you see Jagger start laughing. Stale.
Right.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. They got along really well. And when Luke Perry was the host, really funny. All you guys out there with sideburns, you all owe me money. He was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And he was in that skit with Julius Sweeney and Phil Hartman, real naive handyman around the house, and Julius Sweeney's really flirting with him. He's like, oh, gosh, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, he doesn't even know. He's just coming on to him. And at the end, Phil Hartman comes on to him.
Right.
And he's just working around the house, like, completely oblivious. But
right.
You think of Lorne Michaels, you know, how he survived, you know, of course, the first 5 years and then on to today. He's really the comedy laureate of this country.
He practically runs all of NBC's late-night TV because he's the producer of The Tonight Show. He's a producer of late-night with Seth Meyers, and he produces SNL. So anything that's late-night on TV and NBC, he's it.
And, you know, he was driving force behind Kids in the Hall and,
right.
You know, 30 Rock, of course. But, yeah, Lorne Michaels is, there's autobiographical movies waiting for him because just his it's just unbelievable how he kind of moved with the times and really survived. And, you know, in the commercial parodies, you know, paying homage to Carol Burnett, you know, who started that all, really.
Right.
So
right.
The early commercial parodies were, they recognized her genius. And, of course, lastly, Nick, the coffee talk one with Roseanne and Madonna when Barbara Streisand walks on stage.
Yeah.
And they're all completely, and I was there at the Full Dress right before that show, you know, down in New York.
Yeah.
And I was sitting right in front of the stage. Red Hot Chili Peppers, of course, was the band. And just to see the whole inner workings, how that
big
square room, and they have the commercials that they're going to show during the show playing on the monitor while you're watching, and they're moving scenery around,
yeah.
And the
amount of work that goes into that show every week is mind-boggling. I mean, from Monday on. I mean, the writers, the performers, they're all sleeping there. They're writing till 5-6 in the morning, pitching ideas, and then they got to put that show together. You walk into that show, you walk in to that office on a Monday morning, you've got nothing, and then you have to do a 90-minute live comedy show four and a half days later. It's insane.
Exactly,
it's insane.
And then it's the sets and the coordination. I mean, you don't just walk out on stage and do the material. You're there. It is frantic between commercial breaks.
Absolutely.
You wouldn't believe it until you saw it. And the Roseanne one was to the far left of the stage where the opening monologue is, and I was in front of the music stage, and I'm looking way to my far right, and there's a. And that same one, and that same day was Phil Hartman was and Roseanne were in there to see Dick Clark.
Right.
Listen, Brent Spade was the receptionist. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, the inner workings of just pulling that off, let alone material, is just unbelievable.
It's incredible. All right, Steve, thanks for the call.
Thanks again, Nick.
All right, we got to run here because we got to hit the news here. And Steve Grzanich is coming up with the opening bell. We'll be back tomorrow, Wild Card Wednesday, and lots of other fun.